Hi, my name's Sean Taylor. That guy over there spinning in circles is seasick. No, not seasick, just regular sick. Motion sick? I don't know. His name's Chris Ford. He's the Objective Geek. And welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters, where we are delighted to give you our thoughts, first in non-spoilery and then spoilery fashion, to Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender Season 2, the live-action one. And I don't know where else I was going with that other than, yeah, I'm stoked to talk about it. But first, Chris, how are you? What have you been up to this week?
I've been good. I feel like I've been, you know, very enthralled in the world of Avatar lately. I think you came over, we recorded. Just our quick little first impressions. So watch all of book two. And then I went back and watched book one because I didn't finish my rewatch of book one. Freaking love my rewatch book one, honestly. Maybe because I didn't watch the first episode. I mean, first episode has lots of great stuff in it. It just has some questionable acting at the end. Anyway, sure, nonetheless.
Fair enough.
Then I rewatched book two. So I've watched book two twice now since then. I've been trying to tie up or finally finish this issue to our fanfiction Kitsune that I've kind of had writer's block for a while now. We're just like, I don't know, I just finally got back into it and finally like found an essence of a story that made me connect with the story. Or at least made it interesting on this one issue. Then I've been playing around with a little bit of AI, which I should, I'm not using AI in the thing. I was just curious, like, oh, what if I've made a homage Batman cover, but of Kitsune. I'm going to do it myself. I want to see what AI would do. I'll look. And then I've been hoping to play the new game, but I'm waiting to buy it on physical media. That's important. I don't know when it comes out.
It's a bit of a sore spot
on Amazon,
right now, Chris.
On Amazon, the fighting game apparently doesn't come out till October on the physical part, so that would be annoying if I got to wait till October. Jeez, making us wait till October for lots of stuff, or maybe they're not. I don't know.
Poor PlayStation. They deserve it. Everybody giving PlayStation a horrible time, and they deserve it. But then Xbox does this thing where they're like, "We're going to introduce this initiative where you put your disc in." And we retrieve this unique ID to play your game, and then you don't need the disc to play the game anymore. Which, Chris, is their less direct way of saying we're also done with physical games. They just didn't say it, but it's that.
Yeah, but
like, that's what
it
is.
I assume you can, you know, sell that again and still have the life cycle beyond that, and you actually.
If it's a unique ID that is tied to your disc, I would say it is unlikely that two people could use it at the same time. So theoretically, you could sell it, but the resale market will be challenging in that case.
True.
Difficult. But more importantly, though, like what I'm getting at is it's still Xbox saying kind of the same thing, which is that in the very near future, we are also done with physical. They just didn't say it, and I feel like everybody's kind of letting them off the hook just because PlayStation at least had the guts to just be like, nope, we're done. And
it's like
Nintendo had one foot in the grave for like a month now or a couple months now, you know.
Because we'll probably bring up community at some point, and eventually we will probably in a couple weeks, maybe a few weeks, several. Once we get through a couple episodes here, we'll
probably
get to our community episode. But there's like that scene in community. I forget what the Citigroup was accused of, but it's like the dean was like, "All right, step forward, whoever did this," and they all look at each other, and then like Jeff and Britta pretend to step forward, and then they step back. That's kind of like Xbox being like, "Oh, glad you went ahead and stepped forward, PlayStation."
And Nintendo the same thing too, right? Nintendo's doing Nintendo things. They're both like, look at us. We're Chris, it's the montage episode, which, first of all, the compiled together speech at the end of the montage episode is beautiful in an artistic way, not a useful way. It's beautiful. And second, that's the episode where they point out, like, Abed saw Jeff and Britta, like, putting their clothes on after sex, and they convinced him that a leprechaun came, blah, blah, blah. And then Jeff's like, you guys are ignoring the larger point, which is that Abed is a full-grown man who clearly still believes in leprechauns. And that's a great moment in that speech. I think it's the end of season two, probably the penultimate or two or three episodes before the end. Montage episode. But anyway, listen, PlayStation, you know, you broke my heart, inevitably, of course. And then Xbox, so I'm not letting you off the hook. You're doing the same thing, just less specifically. Whatever. It's fine. I can never buy another video game again and probably still never play every game I have. And I'll survive.
Yeah.
Whatever. Chris, rewatches, we've had very opposite experiences. First and foremost, I did not get to rewatch season two. I meant to with Heather. I just didn't get to. However, my rewatch of season one, less enamored. Not extensively less enamored, but unfortunately, I think it's because of my opinions on the second season that's kind of dragging. Like, I need some time. Let's put it that way. I need to step away and like a deep breath and then come back to it. But anyway, I'm glad your rewatch of season one went well. That's very refreshing to hear. That's good. This stood the test of time.
It did.
Do you want to jump in? Do you want to start talking season two?
Yeah, let's.
Spoiler free first.
Yes, I think we should talk spoiler free. And I think before we get into our spoiler discussion, we can go ahead and give just like a high level rating out of 10. And then we'll go into spoiler. If I had to guess, the non-spoiler will take probably about 20 minutes, 15, 20. So yeah. So for me, it's interesting. Book two, I tried to think, book two puzzled me for a while because I think so many things improved from season one. I think the acting improved. Like across the board, I think everyone did better. And part of that is just that they're more mature, and they're just probably just better actors. You know, you just get better in the craft, but you keep acting it. So I think that got better. I think the bending got better. I think the action looks great. Like, I love the bending, love the sound design, love how unique it is across different benders, things like that. I think this show is quality. Like, anytime I see someone complaining about, like, there are some complaints about the show that I think are ludicrous and unserious, and the internet just likes the internet because that's the internet, and people like to feel good about themselves and feel good about yourselves. You got to put other things down that you can never dream about doing yourself. That sounds harsh.
It's accurate, right? If your goal on the internet is to say things and have them heard, those things have to be sometimes insane.
I do. The things I love about this season is a good, I think it's a good to great adaptation. Because what this season does is that I think a good adaption takes your characters and it keeps the soul of them, but it provides a slightly different lens or just a slightly different angle, right? But like the core is the same. It's like you're, you know, looking at one of those three-way mirrors. Like you're just looking at it from a different angle and a different approach. But the core and the essence of those characters still remain mostly true. And I think you really get to explore some different things, like especially with like Zuko and Iroh, a little bit with Toph and Katara. Not as much as Katara this season. Last season, love Katara. This season, I think she's pretty okay. I think the actress is doing much better. There's lots of subtle things that the actress does that I think is really good. Like she does a lot of subtle humor and just subtle head nods and stuff like that. I think she's really elevated her game there. But overall, high level, before I hand it off to you, I think this season is good. Like, you know, I think objectively it's good. Subjectively, I love watching it. That doesn't kind of affect the, doesn't quite affect the actual rating of it. But like I said, so many things improved about the season. But I was still puzzled though. The thing that puzzled me was just like, why doesn't the season feel as good if so many things improved that I think improved? And I think I figured it out, but we'll get in a little more into it. But we'll get even more into it in the non-spoiler part. But just overall, the season, I think was good. Could have been better a lot of ways. Lots of different new stuff I liked. Some stuff I was like, eh. But overall, I think it's a good to great adaptation.
I think, Chris, I think this is a mediocre, I think this is a mediocre season. I think this is mediocre adaptation work. I think that they had the opportunity for it to be very good. And as you have mentioned, there's a lot of things I like. The acting is better. The scenery, the things like that we get to see is at least on par. It's attractive. The action might be a hair better. There's some awkward bits, but it might be a hair better, at least on par. Right? Those things are good. The story that they're trying to tell is good in the way, both as an adaption and the way it's rearranged and trying to do something different and just stand alone, which honestly might, not to us, but to a normal person who maybe hasn't, who is approaching this for the first time or just who isn't an insane Avatar fan, might be important just as a standalone story. It's a good story. It has no guts. It rearranges the story, but it doesn't take any risks. It swings and it misses, or rather it doesn't swing at all. It's like the opposite. It's like a striking out looking at so many places where it could have been bigger and better and more interesting, regardless of how much it would have changed from the original, just from the perspective of telling a good, interesting story. There's too many places where it didn't have the, like, it should have just had a little more balls and took a bigger swing and tried a little harder. And it just, I don't know how to say it. Just, it feels flat. It feels,
I think there is to piggyback on your point about like swinging. It is a, I'm sure the task of like, all right, this is an adaption. Like, what is the balance between taking some swings and sticking to what's there? Like, do we want to really piss off fans? And I'm getting to a point where I'm just like, screw it. Do whatever you want.
I don't care about the other fans, too. That's important. I don't care about other fans. I want to see a good story on TV, and I think that you and I are going to do a good job of appreciating a good story regardless of the respect or disrespect to the original, right? There's just too many places where it just left me wanting something bigger or better or more. And it's like it was right there for the taking. And they
interesting you say that about bigger part, because I was trying to think, I'm like, nothing, like season one ended with the siege on the north, and it was Aang and the Avatar stay in the ocean spirit.
Great finale, Chris. Great finale.
Yeah, huge finale. So I was trying to figure out, like, okay, well, they did, like, the stuff they did was pretty much close to the show, right? The stuff they chose to do, like the Crossroads of Destiny. But I was trying to think to myself, why did the original book two jumped in quality compared to book one, the original. And things felt bigger. Why did things feel bigger in the original of book two? And I think what it comes down to is possibly they don't have the budget to do, like, the big stuff.
Come on, get out of here. It's Netflix.
I think in order to do season two very properly, you would have had to split it up. And I think after, you know, they had good views and stuff, enough to.
But not as much as the first season, Chris. There weren't even as many bigger, like, just big panoramic, beautiful, wide shots and stuff. It was more enclosed.
Yeah, well, I mean, so my point was, like, season one was pretty successful. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a grand slam. Mm-hmm. Not if season one was like, oh, this is like Stranger Things, they probably would have been like, oh, we can take our time. We can split up book two and give it what they want. Because, like, the things we were missing from book two that they could have expanded about, could have made it feel bigger, was like, oh, well, if we actually went to the desert and that, well, if we had the drill. Like, there are so many times where there's lots of battles that are missing that felt big. Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's drill, whether it's the Freedom Fighters, Jet and Team Avatar versus the Dai Li.
Even the battles that were there that were good. They were good on screen. And I wouldn't argue with that, because that would be wrong. They're good on screen. But they just weren't big enough. They had the opportunity to what do you call it, go into sort of gratuitous fight scene lunk, and they just but they didn't. They were so
I don't think those battles that they chose are that
not at all
big. Like the you know, if I think they translated the fights pretty closely, except for one exception I have, and this goes back to maybe just the lack of budget thing. So if we go by like fight by fight, like the Crossroads of Destiny fight, I think that was a pretty good, like, they're in, they brought to life the caverns and stuff and the crystal cones and whatever not. Mm. That fight is pretty much a one for one.
That's
right?
A pretty cool fight.
What other fights?
That was almost a pretty gratifying finale. There's a very, very big caveat in there.
But I think the fights they chose, they adapted them pretty closely. It's just that the fights they didn't choose were those bigger grand fights. Like, the drill episode is a huge thing. Like, Aang and Azula's fighting on top of freaking moving drill that's drilling into the city. Some of those other fights are a lot bigger. Like, it's like the Dai Li versus Freedom Fighters, Team Avatar. That's like 10 versus 8 people. Like, that's a huge fight. But there was a couple moments that I thought could have been bigger. And it's like, well, why didn't they overplay this?
And this is important, Chris. Even non-fight moments, even non-budgetary choices that should have been, not could have, they should have been bigger. Should have hit harder. Yeah. Non-budget related choices, just storytelling choices.
Yeah, I think some of that. So one of my biggest, I think, issue of this season is the lack of emotion. Like, season two, I don't want to keep going back to the original, but we will because it's a natural thing.
Yeah.
Season two kind of feels like the most emotional season.
It should be.
We, you know, you lose Appa for like half the season.
There's a 33% of the season where Aang is in turmoil. There's a few episodes. Well, we're getting too into episode specific. There's major chunks of the season that are emotionally tumultuous of season two.
Yeah, and I just think the season sort of. I think season one last year. Season one.
Sean's baby, BC, before Camden.
Season one of Netflix show, I think it's full of some great emotion. Mm-hmm. I think it's there. I think they added on to it, on top of the original. And season two just doesn't have it. There's a couple moments that I thought were good, and we can get into it at some point. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of lacked emotion. Like, I think that is the biggest thing. I think I have reasons for it that we can kind of get into. But I think my biggest issue with season two is that for me, it just lacked some of that emotion.
I would say that the things that got better are the things that kind of just organically do get better. Some acting, some chemistry, some scene filling, et cetera, things. And the things that got worse were kind of elective choice type things that I found upsetting, which leads me to say that my, like, my last bit of non-spoiler thoughts is that season one, which I still, you know, go back and watch our ratings and reviews and stuff, which I still have my qualms with, but season one is a better season. And I don't think I'm afraid to say that.
If we're, you know, wrapping up a little bit of our...
I didn't mean to wrap up too soon if you're not ready for the non-spoiler. Oh, no.
I have one more point, but I agree with you. I think season one was better than season two. Well, I think, like I said, they made a lot of proofs. I also think, and this might be just the optimist in me, I think they're setting up a lot of great stuff in season three.
But I don't trust them now because they set up stuff for season two and they didn't. Now I don't even trust them.
I think they've been planning. Like, there's stuff in season one that I felt was somewhat throwaway, like the fall of Omashu.
Mm-hmm.
And they started off, like, that storyline carried straight into it, and it was a huge part of this season. Of like, hey, these refugees had to go from Omashu to here, like, we gotta get, like, that story. So, to me, they are thinking overarching ideas across all these seasons. And so I'm hopeful that they will land this plane. One thing, season three has bigger battles. It's going to feel way more epic and more and grander and bigger.
But
and
if I think this they season can performs that, less good, what's going to happen to that budget, Chris? How are those fights going to look?
Oh, it's already filmed. It's okay. Done. It's a wrap. Yeah, they're done filming.
That my trust in their moment to moment choices is a little damaged. At the moment, I'll have to see it to believe it.
My last kind of non-spoiler point is I think this show really pointed out to me the difference between animation and live action, just in general of everything. Like, animation, every episode can be as big as you want it to be, right? Like, you can... I'm sure it costs and is harder to do certain action scenes, but relatively,
sure.
It's like, but relatively, you can do whatever you want in each episode, which is why you can have, you know, a drill episode, why you can have a 909 battle.
Why the damn why library can take place in a different. It's okay, Sean. You know what?
I'm not mad. That's
I actually, yeah, no, that's fair. I think I'm overreacting to that. That's like a microcosm of the larger season. I would say that does bring about a point. You know, Chris, someday, like, if we're both in a good mood, we're both feeling all right and can have a nice discussion. Like, I say that, like, we don't always just have nice discussions. But talking about the need.
Me and Sean's been beefing forever.
Forever. Chris is dropping his diss track next week. It's anti-Sean.
Yeah.
15 straight tracks.
Called You Don't Know What a Travel Is. It's goes back to our one-on-one
great
basketball
great deep cut. Well, mine is called the definition literally varies by league, but the it'd be fun, not fun, it'd be interesting to have an episode about the need for live action. I think we keep adapting things to live action that are better in animation for the reason you just described. They are better by default in animation.
So so part of my conclusion, which is a half-baked conclusion at this point, but TV shows, I think, are better in animation. I think you have as much budget as you want to tell whatever story. Sounds big buff, big fights. But I think live action movies, like, I think there could be a great live action, Kyoshi novel, like, movie.
But could it be a live action adaptation of the Kyoshi novel and not of the TV show? You know what I mean? Like, instead of something that we already have this beautiful kind of animated imagery in our heads of what it's supposed to look like. So take something that was a book that we all might have different interpretations of, sure, but and put that in a movie form, or I don't know, in live action form. I mean,
I think I think you could make a live action movie of every single season of Legend of Korra, pretty much. I mean, you could cut some stuff out. But I think, you know, both have their, you know, their pros and their cons, right? Like the pros of live action is like, wow, this stuff is brought to life. Like whatever was in my head and on the screen is like, it is more tangible and real, right? Like there are so many scenes in this and book two. I'm like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. Like this show, I think looks great. And I think it really brought a lot of stuff to life. I want to give the credit for that. Like the serpent looks great. Mm-hmm. I love the way Appa looks lots of times.
I've loved the most bending, of the scenery. All that has stuff. Been really cool.
Yeah, especially this season. I think they did a lot. I was worried going in the season that it was going to be bad budget, but that worry was unfounded. And even we were really worried about the crystal.
It looked catacombs weird in the trailer, and then it barely manifested. But in the trailer, it looked. It looked like a high school play in the trailer, but it did not manifest. I will spoil that. It better advertise. Chris, it mostly looks tremendous. I still, and we've talked about it before, but it doesn't lessen the issue. Like, we can address it, but the issue still exists. Like, waterbending and airbending just don't look as good. Earthbending and firebending do look good. I just making airbending and waterbending come to life is harder. Ice looks good.
I think certain things. Like when Katara, like first episode, she does that thing and she shoots it. Like that looks great.
The ice looks way better than just the water. Which I know we're
water when you're rapping. Yeah. But hey, I have no issue with that because I can suspend my disbelief is already suspended.
It is, but for the same reason that you can suspend your disbelief is the same reason I think that like you and I can enjoy it just as much in an animated series, that we cannot see an animated series as like a demeaning, you know, a childish thing, or like that's the same skill that we have that makes that possible. To like, yeah, I'm happy to suspend my disbelief to play a cartoon video game, you know, to see myself as Link, even though he's clearly not a human, you know. I think that's the same brain power at work. I could be mistaken. And visually is definitely not the place where I have the issue. It's just, again, we've noted before. Air, we haven't really talked about air, but air is tough to make look good.
I think air looks kind of fun. Like, air is kind of just nothing.
That's a funny way to put it.
Air is just kind of,
it's like
Aang swings and you see, you know, you see things move, but you don't see air. And so I think they do fine. They do good with air. Water, like, water's dirt. So it's,
yep, and water's always hard. I thought the earthbending looked good, right? Even when the back and forth has some jank to it, which we'll get to it, even when the back and forth does have some jank or some like weird timing, like they're waiting on each other type of timing to it, the earthbending itself, the martial artistry and the actual earth looks really good. So again, those parts, technical parts looking good. Other parts maybe.
I have a tough nitpick, which is just because it wasn't done how it is in the show. Well, side note, anytime I hear criticism of the show and it's in the net, if they'd be like, cause I'm very open to hearing criticism, but anytime I hear like, here's a criticism and then the next thing is some to the effect of this wasn't in the show, I'm like, I don't.
Get out of here. That's like, shoot, get out of here.
Like, there's been so much dumb criticism of the show that it almost drowns out valid criticism, which just makes everyone, I think it makes Avatar fans in general look kind of silly. Because there's valid criticism and...
Well, it makes you less willing to, like, wade through criticisms or hear it. Because you get tired of it, of like, nope, that's dumb. You're hateful just for being hateful.
Yeah.
When somewhere underneath there is like, I'd like to think there's some actual construction from quality watchers. Yeah. That's a high horse thing for me to say, but I do believe it. I won't get off this high horse. I'm going to stay right up here. But
all right. Anything else non-spoilery?
Nope. At this point, and I can't go by the number on the screen because I'll have to trim it, but I will put the chapter, is that what you call them in YouTube? The chapter? I'll put the chapter in the description for right now when we're going to start spoiling stuff episode by episode now.
Oh, yeah, we are going episode by episode.
Well, I got to be honest. Some of them are going to run together so bad.
I forgot to mention, and I kind of wanted to say during the non, but it doesn't matter really. Episode titles suck.
No, Chris, that's the spoiler half. That's fine. Episode.
That's what happened.
Somewhere safe. Chris and I thought that was a location. Do you understand this? We thought it was like at the bottom of an action movie where somewhere safe, 12:05 p.m. Central time or whatever. That's how stupid and bland these episode titles. That is spoiler. That's fine. Stupid and bland these episode titles are.
In our defense, season one, they didn't do that. That's not how they handled the title cards in season one.
This is way worse.
If your first one is somewhere safe, I'm thinking, oh, they just don't want to tell us where they're at for some reason. But they want to tell us, though, that they are somewhere safe.
Don't worry about them. They're somewhere safe, which is ridiculous because they're not.
And then the first thing Aang is like fighting Fire Nation people, and I'm like, this is somewhere safe.
So not only are the titles themselves just the literal words, like somebody trying really hard to be artistic and just failing miserably, like they're trying to fit in. They just, but second, like somewhere safe doesn't make sense in that episode outside of like just the literal transport of refugees, like the attempt to get refugees. But even that is, I don't want to say it's like a small part of the episode. But the refugees themselves don't play a ton of role in the episode. It's not even an accurate description of the majority of the episode.
Yeah, so then you go, somewhere safe, a fight once begun. That's a vague, dumb title. Meh.
What does once begun mean? Every fight begins one time? City.
Yeah. Cities, Walls, and Secrets? Great. But also, I feel biased because that's just the episode of a, that's just name of an episode from the original.
That one does not
still
count.
Still, it's a great. But it's a good title. City of Walls. Yeah. Like, that's
a good title that somebody else came up with.
The water falls, the stones emerge.
What is that? That's dumb. It's garbage. That's what it is. Okay, 10,000 things I like.
I'm fine
with 10,000 things. Wait, is that, that's not the original title. Is it from the original?
No, it's not. No, that episode was just called The Spirit Library.
Okay, nope. This is cool. I like 10,000 Things. I get it. Right away, I get it.
I think I like the parable of the two dragons.
Okay. No, of the other ones that we have said, I can get on board with this
one. It's not something vague. And then you have something broken. That's dumb. That's kind of...
What even is broken, Chris? There's lots of things in there that broke. What are they...
This is... I know I said... Somewhat being a hypocrite, but the title Crossroads of Destiny, I think, is a great title
because it's perfect. That's what happens in that episode.
Yes, Zuko's at his crossroads. Yes,
but I mean, theoretically, so is Aang. Like, that title works for in so many different angles. Something broken. That's stupid. Okay, but we.
Okay, those are, that's a, I forget what we,
that's, I mean, a
episode titles aren't a big deal.
That's a qualm, not a nitpick.
I think it's slightly higher than, maybe it's slightly higher than a nitpick.
Whatever is the one above nitpick, it's that one. It's more impactful than nitpick, but not crazy so. But that being said, Chris, let's talk some positives. Let's jump into episode one, which has tons of positives.
Yeah, I think a great start to the season. Like, I was like, oh, wow, they're starting the season great. The fight scene's great. I feel like they're really getting to the refugees stuff. I think they started off great. That, if I say great more.
The conflict between Iroh and Zuko coming right out of the gate is engaging.
Oh, that was some...
Right away. Yeah. And it's different, too. Right, that was different. We're getting this Zuko that you and I were worried was going to be too... Not worried, that's too... But we were thinking might be too good too soon. Nope, comes out and has a clash. Like, okay, tumultuous, good. That's what we need right now.
Yeah, and they did a good job of just like putting us in time of Zuko being like, "We're farming yams." When we started, we were farming this and farming that and that, and now we're back to yams. Like, that was, to me, was some great writing. One thing, it just shows, it's a great way of showing time in a non, great way of showing a duration of time without pigeonholing you to an exact time, but also being like, this cycle, like, they feel lost, like, because they're just back where they've gone. They're going in circles right now, both of these characters.
Also,
are.
That Zuko doesn't understand seasonal labor. That's funny to me. It's never been a merch planner in a fashion industry, that's for sure.
Yes, I think season one started off great. I mean, episode one started off great. And, one thing, they started off with the original intro, just to engage fans a little more. One thing that did bother me, and eventually we'll get to, like, things will change. We'll do an episode on maybe that. But why is Aang so mad at the beginning of this episode? I did not understand, and I thought that was not great writing on why he was so mad.
No good reason. I got nothing.
But then he was kind of like fine, or back to being kind of normal. But it was just
because of the Boomy flashback? Like, we saw the Boomy in the flashback form, or was that not a flashback? Now I'm getting confused. I should have rewatched this.
No, he was when they were. No, you're fine. When they were running from. When they were having the refugees walk on the Serpent's Pass, maybe he is mad because Boomy said no.
That's the only thing I can think of that is not a stretch.
Like, he's like, everybody, come on. And I'm like, geez, like, these people are tired. They are mountain climbing on a serpent on probably got about 3 feet of clearance.
Yeah. For the record, like that it was big mountain, an actual mountain pass, and not just some flat pelt. Like, no earthbender bothered to be like, let's go clear this out. No, I do like that it's like a difficult terrain. That was a minor detail, but that I really appreciated. Visually, too, looked great.
Yeah. Real quick, I really like Azula's actress this season. I think she also changed her voice to sound more like Grey Delisle, and I know just the little nerdy brain in my head was like that. But then she has this line where, like, you know, the Fire Lord gave her mission to this other guy, and she's like, well, Father, what do you want me to do? You just gave my mission to this guy, and I can't conquer Amashu twice. Like, I think she's really great this season.
I did not notice like a voice change in particular, but I'm happy to say that I thought she did great as well.
Yeah. Some other people noticed it that I saw as well. And then we get a lot of the refugees. Oh, we get more Sai, which it's funny. This refugee group is like, let's grab some noticeable people, which I'm fine with. That's not
you think like, there'd be more refugees? That's all I'm gonna say. You think there'd be more?
I mean, we had probably about a group of 20, but like, oh, of this 20, we've met 5 of them. They did introduce a new lady. She comes up later. I don't know why I keep forgetting his name. The secret tunnel guy, he's there. And
Chong. Is it? It's Chong.
Chong.
Yeah, because it's not Cheech.
It's not
Cheech. It's got to be Chong.
Yeah.
Who I just the other day learned for the first time were the original singers of the song Basketball Jones from Space Jam. That's a fun fact I did not know. Anyway, unrelated. I know, weird, right? Why they were those guys. Anyway. Basketball Jones.
We'll get more Danny Pudi. And I'm good with that. We also get... I think Sokka is better this season. I think that was one improvement this season.
His acting skill... I don't even think he was bad last season. His acting skill has noticeably improved.
Yeah, I think he's a lot better. There are some forced stuff this season, which we'll get to. Like the clinchiest line, which is kind of cringe.
That's writing, though, right? I feel like he...
That is absolutely writing.
That's bad writing.
That is... Yeah.
Also...
Even though it was forced in there, yeah.
It should have happened sooner. It could have still happened if there was no reason. It couldn't have happened at the party.
There's no reason for him to bring the drink
And it would have
back home.
It would have still been different, completely different,
yeah,
and way better. Chris, God, I'm getting
imagine him like getting drunk at a royal palace party
and then ideating with this stranger, Chris. That would have been amazing.
Yeah,
whatever.
But I really like his stuff with Suki this season. Mm-hmm. Like where they diverge from, like in the original show, him and Suki. Like, you know, Sokka is hesitant because he lost Yue, but by the end of the episode, him and Suki are good. Like, this season, it's like, no, Sokka's dealing with that hard. But he's like, I am not good. I'm not in a good place. And that is something you can do in a live-action show that you can't necessarily do in an animated show that it's tailored towards, not tailored, but it's directed at all audiences.
But we also... one of the very few qualms I would ever have with the original show, and it kind of sounds like, no, you get to see Sokka develop a relationship instead of just like, nope, instant click. It's like, no, you actually get to see it, work it and work through some kinks and stuff. And that's great.
Yeah. Also, I love Suki. So
Suki's great. We've proven with science that she's great.
Then across the surface pass, and if I'm going too fast,
No, if anything, we got a lot of episodes. We're already 42 minutes of it, and if anything, we're good.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go faster.
Serpent.
They fight the serpent.
Serpent looks great. Iroh and Zuko's moment it's not perfect, but I appreciate that they introduced that tumult also. That's important to me. That's a good positive takeaway.
Yeah. I love that fight with the serpent. I think they improved it from the original. Like, Katara, like, you get to see, like, what she's about. Like, she blocks a freaking thing from the serpent and stuff, and that was great.
We didn't know it was steam for a while, so that'd be like, that's barely a nitpick, but, like, we didn't know it was steam, where it's like, well, they got those burns on their arm.
I think there is some stuff that, like, I know you're not, I know story, to me, parts of good storytelling is just not giving your audience everything, just be like, oh, if they pick it up, they don't, whatever. But there is some stuff that we just didn't pick up, we'll get to in the next episode.
I'm gonna call it a nitpick up, as this is a silly thing that we noticed, so. Chris, episode one, promising, exciting, different, action-y.
It started off, I think episode one started off.
It might be the second best episode of the season. There's only seven. It might be the best or second best episode in it.
You might be right. Start off great. Mm-hmm. It freaking maybe set the bar.
It might have
because episode one in the original, like outside of, I'm sorry, episode one, not in the original, episode one of season one, besides like the new Ada stuff, like with spies and stuff, like that stuff I thought was really cool. But the stuff that was like more of adaption, like it was just like, ah, this is okay.
Yeah,
I guess.
Okay, yeah, we're here. I get.
That's like, there's some bad acting. You're hitting these beats. Yeah, that's good.
A lot of talking heads. Less talking heads in this episode.
Yeah.
So, yep, set the bar high. And Chris, I'm glad we waited till the second episode to.
We never did give our ratings in non-spoiler, but that's okay. We'll give our ratings later.
That feels like spoilery material, right? Maybe. Whichever.
I mean, just giving your ratings. I think it's whatever. It's too late now.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Episode two.
See,
a fight once begun. Whatever that means.
A fight once begun. I don't even remember when they said it in the episode.
Did they
Sean,
say it?
I don't know. One of the biggest controversies, I think, that fans have with this, parts of this, maybe one of the biggest ones, is Zuko and the pregnant lady. And lots of people hate it because they're like, Zuko didn't steal from pregnant lady in the original. And maybe some people have.
Okay, whatever, yeah. Right.
Less superficial qualms with it. But I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Not great in the sense of like, it reestablishes Zuko as a character who is not fully formed and is doing really questionable mm-hmm. things.
It sounds backwards, Chris. I don't like that it actually didn't have any kind of consequence, really. Like, they're still fine later, right?
Yeah. Well, I do. If they show, holy crap. Okay. No, that would be freaking dark.
Okay.
Oh my God.
No. But let's talk about it this way, Chris. They have a moment again. Here's maybe the first time where there was no swing and they're like, could have been, they bring it up later when the girlfriend, whatever her name is, I forget. She's not his girlfriend, brings up, yeah. Oh, they went out on the llama horse, the ostrich llama. What the hell is it called? So upset. I'm so upset. I can't articulate my points. But even then, he just has like the slightest little reaction to it. You know, no big reaction to his crime from this new friend that he's made and he's living under a roof eating her food or whatever. Just the, like he notices she says, and that's it. There's no emotional. No. It should have been emotional for him and us. He should have had turmoil. We should have had turmoil and we didn't, even though she brought it up.
Speaking of, this episode starts Zuko alone, so he steals from pregnant lady, and then he meets, I forgot his name, doesn't matter.
I remember.
The little boy. and all this stuff is good. I also like that Zuko, like, knows even Earth Kingdom, like, army standards and stuff. It's funny, because it goes back to season one, Zuko's, like, prepping his uniform and stuff, and Iroh's like, oh, well, that's wrong. And Zuko's like, oh, okay, let me fix that. Like, he just kind of goes to, like, this sense of, like, Zuko being...
Yeah.
Either really all about form and standards and stuff like that.
I like the setup, but I don't like that there's no... Again, whether or not they're actually in the armed forces, whether or not they are, whatever they call their militia, they were still just thugs, and I wanted more out of that. It's like everybody just kind of got off the hook at the end. I wanted a fight right there. I wanted a fight. Those guys were just thugs, because they stole the gear, because yeah, they quote unquote earned it or not. Those are thugs.
I mean, they were absolutely the soldiers. They were just terrible thuggish soldiers.
Shitty ones. And Zuko went through all the trouble to stand up for this strange kid. It's like, you know what? No, go ahead and fight those people. With no bending, too, right? With no fire bending. That's where the intrigue comes from, to me.
Yeah.
I want to fight.
So since we're already... We can just kind of talk through that side of the story. We don't have to go through order in the episode. But the setup, I think this is one of the greatest changes that this season has made. And with between Zuko and,
I can't remember her name, and I wish I did. Cause I agree with where you're going. I wish I knew her name. I'll Google it.
Yeah. Like to combine the character song from book two, the, where they, you know, Iroh and Zuko visits his family. He steals the ostrich horse. To combine her character with the mom from Zuko Alone into a love interest for Zuko. Cause that girl in the original didn't feel like love interest.
No.
She just felt like a girl that was Zuko met. I think it was
genius. We get to watch Zuko develop a relationship, an actual human relationship with not just a peasant, but an Earth Nation peasant, and you're living in her house. And I think that's a beautiful juxtaposition for Zuko to face. I think that's great. A great setup, at least.
Yeah. And that actress is great. I hate one thing, part of fandom that I hate. Sometimes I got to think to myself that sometimes people on the internet are immature, like literally immature, like teenagers and stuff.
What's her name? Or Faye? They're just
Faye, yes. I thought this while I was watching it, like, oh, she would have made a great Mai. But people have kind of like pitted this actress against the actress for Mai. And like, you know, lots of people fat shaming her, which the thing is, she's actually not one thing. You shouldn't fat shame no matter what.
Yeah.
But the actress herself just has a round face. Like she's really not fat.
I say on two counts. First of all, first of all, just stop. Second of all, you're wrong anyway. So stop.
Yeah.
I wasn't as fond of this.
I do think this actress would make a better Mai, but I think she's a good actress.
She was a little flat for me, which is probably why she might have made a good Mai. She was a little, I'm gonna refer to this several times, but like a removed flat teenage vibe, and she had too much.
Yeah,
hair.
She's like, she's
that would have made a good maid, though. So I get it. Not for fat like, reasons. That's stupid.
Yeah, but the actress here for Faye, I've seen. I watched her in one of my most recent new shows. I love Rooster on HBO Max. She plays a student, and she's great in that. She has a kind of a small role, but similar. She's great in that. Anyway, her and Dallas Lu, the actor for Zuko, great chemistry. Like
they felt
like they need to. He needs to come back here after the season is over. He needs to come back
why,
here.
So he can have one rock weekly thrown in his general direction.
Yeah. So they did a great job setting that up, and then you know we mentioned before and you alluded to earlier. After the execution towards the end, I don't think negates the great build-up and the great building that up and their character dynamic, but it was disappointing that it didn't hit really, really hard.
It does
not. On second watch.
It does not negate the story beats that they told were good beats, a good story. I don't want to undersell how big of an opportunity it missed to make us feel really strong feelings during Zuko's season-long metamorphosis. It missed a huge opportunity that very literally amounts to one rock getting thrown.
Well, no, I don't think she threw... Oh, yeah.
Just the little see, you didn't remember. Like, that's how weak shit that ending was.
The thing is, on second watch, it's not as bad. But man, if the line was like, she got all up in his face, or something like, how could you like push him or something like
tears?
Like, you
eggs,
like we trust you, like we let you
feelings,
like we let
Chris.
You into our house,
yeah,
and into our family.
He lived with them, like Chris. He was, and then you just get like a flat reaction from everybody in a rock. That's all you get.
Yeah.
And we could have felt that could have that scene alone. Should have made you wonder if Zuko shouldn't just be the bad guy. That scene should have left you wondering that out loud. And not even close. It didn't affect Zuko. It barely affected the people in the scene. Chris, that's my second most disappointing thing of this entire season. That bit.
So, it is disappointing. I don't want to hold it fully against the show. Right? I compare that to like, I compare this to like LeBron James. Like my worst.
Sorry, if he goes to the Sixers, I'm actually gonna cry a little bit. It's gonna be so mad.
The criticism of LeBron, and I'm not a LeBron James fan, I'm a phobia. But the criticism of LeBron that I hate the worst is, oh, he's 4-6 in the finals. And I'm like, well, he got to the finals.
Yeah, you'd get to the finals 10 times. What's wrong with you?
I'm like, hey, I'm not going to hold it against him for not being 4-0. Instead, he's 4-6. It's like, and so
Bill Self is like 2-5 in national championship games or something like that. Chris, like, yeah, and what do you?
So like, it feels disappointing. It feels really disappointing, but I don't want to necessarily hold it against the show because they gave me something. They got to a certain level, and it was great that they got to the level. They just didn't.
But does it?
You know, they just didn't reach it. Promised land completely.
But it would have been so easy, Chris. That's not a budget thing. That's a
like missing,
writing and
it's like missing a layup.
Thing. Yeah, that's not. That's not losing in a 7-game series in the final, Chris. That's missing a dunk. There's a dunk. It is right there, and you realized you were 5'10" and white and can't jump that high, and that's what happened.
I'm saying would it have hurt more, or would it have hurt less, if the setup was like pretty close to the previous show? And so it probably would have hurt a little bit less.
Yeah, because we wouldn't have had
still
such
hurts.
A good relationship to start with, which we do care about. Yeah, no, your point's
it still
really
hurts.
Valid.
Still hurts. It really hurts. Like it's just like, man, what? You guys could have knocked that.
How
that
could
app
not
out.
One person watch this, Chris? Like, if you're in that room with those people and you're watching this, and everybody's just like, "That's great," and just not one person be like, "I got a question." I have a suggestion, perhaps.
What if we expand on this And then
what if you feel feelings like, while you're when we were watching it, made me think of Abed directing the characters playing Troy and Abed. They're recording him doing the rap. It just made me think of Abed asking, like, "Do you hate doing this? Do you hate this?"
Maybe they're like, "Listen, Iroh just got shot. We don't want to put too much on."
No, you know, get over it. Chris, go. You know
Make it away.
I would never say this in very often. So, you know, write it down. Go ahead and go a little more HBO with this one, Chris. Go ahead and take it a little farther in the HBO direction of TV shows. Anyway,
that was
season two.
Great setup.
Episode two. Be prepared to be emotionally connected, and then a little let down. That's all I'll say. But that's just the A plot of season or of episode two. I mean, that's just A plot.
Yeah.
Funny enough, the B plot.
Lots of other stuff happened. The main thing that happened.
It's called Tapha B plot.
Oh gosh. She is the B plot. The main thing is we introduced Toph. And I will say this is one of those areas where I'm like, oh, they have a budget. Because the ring in the original feels big, feels like they're in an arena.
Like you're watching it. And this one here. WWE Raw.
Yeah. And this one feels like, you know, in Legend of Korra where she's fighting, it's after. After she gets paralyzed and she's fighting in that Earth fight.
Yeah, that's a great comic. Just underground fights.
And like, yeah, it's just underground fights. Like that. This looks like just underground fights. It's like there's no big money involved and stuff.
But I wanted it to be a big arena. Like, that's not a change because the wrestling part of it all was part of the fun.
Yes.
That okay. I'll say that's probably maybe qualm. But I just want to note because I know I've been pretty negative here in this episode that I really do like Toph. I really do like the earthbending in here.
Yeah.
The only other like negative note related to this plot that I can think of on top of my head, Chris, is the way that they introduce the fights. You remember they pull the little prank by like telling them everything about the fights except for where it is, and then they pull out that none your business joke. That's some pretty bad.
That was like, listen, we got one thing. We need this moment. Well, they didn't have to do. They could have just been like, they could have just saw on a poster. Like Team Avatar could have read, oh, on a poster, Earth Rumble.
Yeah.
The words of that, and then the
wrestling dynamic
the people come
too
in
would have fit better to the showmanship of the whole thing, and then this underground nonsense would have been necessary. But
yeah,
whatever. It's that's qualm to nitpick, maybe territory.
So one other thing about this fight with Toph versus a Boulder, and one other reason like. Toph's introduction felt bigger in the original. Uh-huh. But I think it's because she went 1 versus 7, right? She fought like 7 or 12 or so people by herself. And they didn't do that in this episode either because of budget or because of just like, well, we just got to tie these stories here, there. So we got to drop that part of it.
They didn't have
but that's
the time
another
in this one either, I don't feel like.
Maybe. Yeah. But that's another like thing of like, why doesn't this season feel as big? Mm-hmm. Because Toph's intro felt big. It was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, one of the ring is bigger. She's taking on all these people by herself who are apparently some of the best earthbenders ever. So that's another reason why, it doesn't feel as big.
Toph's intro in the animated series felt like Korra busting through the wall saying, I am the Avatar dealer with it. It had the same gravitas, but for like an entire episode.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it felt like a... Like just introducing another character, which is not a great feeling in this case.
Yeah. So they're introduced to Toph. They go to her house, they meet her parents, whatnot. And I do really like the actress for Toph. I think she did a great job.
I like the whole Toph, the whole Peifang family. The parents are good. Toph's good. The servant fella, he's good. The Boulder is a little rough, but he's supposed to be a little rough. He's supposed to be kind of jaded.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. And then there's some side story. Azula comes around and because she fights Azula and her posse. Fights Suki. I like a lot of the hand-to-hand fighting. Like Suki versus Mei and Ty Lee. I think that stuff was great.
I think that May and Ty Lee's stuff doesn't look as good as the bending stuff, the pure hand-to-hand. I would prefer the bending, but that's not to say it looked bad. Just
I think one scene of that looked weirdly CG of May running.
It was really awkward. I can't just, you have to see it. And when you see it, you'll be like, that's what Chris meant. It was weird.
But I love Ty Lee. Like, her cartwheels and stuff, and the character is very cartoonish. And it's funny. It's interesting, because I kind of had this observation of, like, why does Suki connect with me so much? One thing, I think the outfit looks great, the makeup looks great. But, like, she is probably the most expressive one, and, like, which probably feels a little bit more cartoonish.
Yeah.
And then Ty Lee's great, also, I think.
Yeah.
So they fight. Oh, sorry.
Nope. I agree. Like them both.
And then they have their little Mexican standoff, and you know, and that fighting's pretty good, pretty decent. Got no qualms there. Oh, one of my, I think, maybe differences between this and it being an adaption is that, like, maybe stuff why it doesn't feel bigger, because season in the original, like, Azula feels like a constant threat, like from Omashu to them being on the Mongoose things to her being on the drill to her being like invading Ba Sing Se. Like, she felt like, when are we going to finally beat her, because she is a threat. And so they only really get like a couple different confrontations with Azula. And so it you know, in this one, and so it, I think it kind of lessens, some of that finally we might defeat Azula type of deal.
We use the saying like clear and present, danger, and maybe doesn't have the same clear presence every episode.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, Toph joins Team Avatar, and that's kind of the episode there.
Episode 3, the one with the good title.
I'm looking at my TV. Dang it, went to freaking that season. Oh, Sea of Walls and Secrets. It's interesting. I don't even have to really look at, go through the scenes in here, because it's kind of just like, hey, they're in Ba Sing Se, and there's a party. They did have to like split up for a minute. And oh, the scene I like is Aang's earthbending. I also love how Aang's earthbending training, how Toph is trying to train him, but then Boulder comes and the Boulder lends his advice, and the other guy lends, like, for some reason that really worked for me for Aang's earthbending training.
I'm gonna go ahead and rip a band-aid off with this one.
Good,
Chris.
Rip it off.
Is that this is the last season three, or like even, or sorry, episode three, or even kind of episode two, sort of the last time you care about the other refugees at all. They are no longer important in this story, other than Sai and Sai's girlfriend, other than that they exist. But so, and the only, I wouldn't say that's hugely upsetting, but the trailer certainly built up maybe this that kind of that, like, there again, it's an opportunity for really emotional story path that the trailer kind of built up, and it just doesn't. The refugees, they're kind of done. We don't care about them anymore, and that's weird to me, or at least a miss. So that's a big band-aid.
Well, I mean, they got into the city and stuff, so that was
the city where no war exists. So I guess, like, all right. There we go. It's like, again, maybe just trailer buildup causing some of that feeling there, but
yeah.
Anyway.
We do get some Zuko jet stuff, which is fine, whatever.
Jet's a huge a-hole in this season.
He's very much a Jet might be the most different, and I do think
he's the inverse Haru. Chris, Haru got way cooler, and Jet got way dumber. He's his flip-flop.
I do think, just talk about Jet real quick, and that we can sum up thoughts on Jet. He has a decent arc here where he loses himself and he ends up sacrificing himself in the end because he finally feels like, hey, like, we have a way at winning. now, and so he feels like he can give his life for that.
Presents a spark.
But Jet, and one thing, you don't even like Jet in the original.
Nope. I like him better now in the original than I did.
But Jet in the original, like, he is a tragic character. Like, and it's poetic justice with Jet in the original, right? Like, he starts off as a freedom fighter who's like, I'm going to kill the Fire Nation no matter what. And he ends up, like, fighting the Earth Kingdom, and he dies at the Earth Kingdom hands. Like, that is some poetic justice type of deal. So he ends up being a very tragic character, I think, in the original. And here, not as much. Mm-hmm. And that's as much as I need to really talk about.
That's fair.
Jet.
He.
I like Jet Ennis. I like the actor. I think he does a good job.
Yeah.
It's just.
I'm generally fine with the role that the character plays. There, I would say there feels like there's a missing bump between Jet Season 1 and Jet Season 2 of that turn. There's like a missing crux or climax of his complete turn to disregard his friends and stuff that we don't really feel.
Yeah.
You kind of assume. I can live with
yeah,
that. He's an a-hole. He's supposed to be an a-hole. I'm okay with that. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, we get introduced to Long Fang, which is a big difference, I think, on the show with him getting a relationship, kind of a mentorship with Aang, or maybe even slightly a father figureship.
That's fair. At very least, like a guardian, like my house, my rules,
yeah,
kind of guardian, but guardianship for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple different teams. Oh, I actually really like the dinner party. Like, there was lots of great little, throughout the season, especially this episode, they did a good job of incorporating Tales of Ba Sing Se in here, which I didn't think, I commend them for doing that in a pretty natural way. That was like, oh, they're doing this. Okay.
We pointed out some places where it's like, oh, there's that bit, and oh, there's this bit, and I think it's nice that they accounted for any of the bits in there. It was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they eating Aang learns how to earthbend a little bit. Saga has a breakdown, which again, I think the actor does a great job in lots of these kind of more emotional moments, the actor for Saga. And I feel like I've skipped over a couple different things, but
The dinner party, I don't have too much of a qualm with the episode. I would say you're kind of getting introduced to Toph. And you're getting the Toph that hates high society but knows about it. And they're trying to get, the crux is that they're trying to get to the Earth King. They're trying to get in front of the Earth King's face, and they're pretending to be high society to do it. And Chris, I gotta be honest, it's not this bad episode, but there's not a whole lot else that happens in this episode.
I agree with that. I like the episode. There's nothing wrong with the episode at all. But like you're saying, it's kind of one of those in between episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. Not a filler. It is not a filler. It's very integral.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah.
And this, I'm trying not to look too negatively on this episode, but somewhere in here, or maybe episode 4, which we'll segue into now, you start to like wonder, like, are we just in Ba Sing Se the whole time? Like, I know this episode with. Said out loud, I was like, I know this season's only 7 episodes long. We're going into number 4, and we got a lot of things to achieve.
It's funny, that was jarring. Of like, oh, we're just going to be in Ba Sing Se this whole time. Which I went back and I looked at the episodes of like, all right, what Ba Sing Se is the central crux of season 2,
sure.
And there were like. The parts in season 2 in the original that they go to that they don't go here is the desert. They still go to the library. Mm-hmm. They go to Toph's place, but they still do that earlier in the season anyway, in episode 2.
Even Toph's thing feels much closer to Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
They go to the swamp, and they already went to the swamp in the previous season. And so it's not that. They didn't have to go anywhere else. I think they were fine confining it to Bossing Say. It does take a little bit of motion away from the story, which makes it feel a little more stagnant, and that does affect, you know, your viewing and everything.
To your previous comment, it reduces how maybe big it feels. If that's a common theme here, why does this not feel as big as, well, like here, they're stuck in like a room and a couple different buildings in one city. So yeah, that's going to reduce the grandeur of it for sure.
I really like the Aang's earthbending training. I feel like this is like the most training we ever see Aang do in anything in any of any element.
Which is good.
Even of the original.
I even kind of sort of like the Toph being told one thing and interpreting it wrong and taking it another way, but it felt like a very Toph fashion, and then that's what broke through with Aang. I like that. It's a fun turn.
Yeah. I think she did a great job. The actress, I'm going to say that again and again. Mm-hmm. But she also did a good job of just, she did a good job playing blind from what I can tell. And the part that I like most is where, like, Aang, like, she wakes him up every single morning. And then, like, the last time, because you go through the montage, Aang, like, stops her. She's like, "Are you trying to stop me?" She almost has a smile on her face because, you know, it just proves that she's a good teacher.
It was a really long montage.
It was a long montage.
It could have been trimmed a little bit further.
Montages can only go so long before it's just like we're just showing clips.
The point of a montage is to like shrink it up.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Gonna need a montage. Montage! Yeah, anyway.
We did get the Painted Lady stuff, which is a little bit.
Just to clarify, this is mostly episode 4. Like, we're kind of scatter shooting here back and forth a little bit, but I think most of the things we're talking about is episode 4 now.
Yep. Got Painted Lady stuff, and that's somewhat shoehorned in here, but you know what? I'm fine with it. It probably wouldn't have came up. It would have probably felt like I feel like it would have been hard for them to go out of the way to go to Jiang Kwai Village in season 3. So I'm fine that they already kind of cut it out. Like she's still helping Fire Nation people.
We needed her to have a like a debatable thing, right? For the fight for the breakup, where she needed a potentially detestable thing that she was doing, and this is how they made that happen. And it was unnecessary. The shoehorn part is good because there was no need to do as the Painted Lady, but
I think they later they wrote in like she didn't want to be found out because it would have hurt their mission and stuff like that. It would have drawn more attention to them. Even if that's the case, they should have said that to begin with, because when she first does it, I'm like, you could have just gave that kid medicine.
Yeah. Or you could have just been anybody in a dark robe, you know what I mean? So, but the actions underneath there, and remembering that she's a kid and she learned about this pain, she had this inspiration, like, okay, fine. Like I said, she needed to contribute something that could have been perceived as negative by our peers. That's what was important.
Yeah. We get a Suki versus the main Ty Lee fight, and then Suki versus Azula, which I think is great. One thing I kind of love leveling up Suki, because for Suki to take out both Mei and Ty Lee, like in the original, I doubt she would be able to do that.
More hands-on so Suki, kind of cool. Too. Less sort of allusions to things happening. Allusions, not illusions. To things happening, and more like, nope, there it is. It's right on screen.
Yeah. And just more kind of Aang and Long Fei getting along. Mm-hmm. One thing I really love about Sokka this season is his relationship and dynamic with other smart people, whether it's with Sai or with Professor Z. Like, he has a place, and like, even though he's not like bragging of like, "Oh, I'm smart." Like, he's even like, "I don't know how to do this stuff," but he's still really interested and still learning, and he's still smart with them.
A testament to his acting quality is he makes those relationships feel organic. Because that guy is a pretty good actor.
I think the actor did it, and he's probably a lot of people's least favorite actor here, but I think he did a really good job this season with his relationships, whether it's with especially with those two, with Katara, not so much.
Aang's actor is definitely the worst actor. I will hear nothing. He's the most awkward.
He is, but he's also the youngest. And one thing I will also note, though, is that Aang, and we went over this when we did, for Aang might just be hard to do.
Sure.
Because even in the original, we're like, yeah, it's probably the worst. He's still great. But the other voice actors are better. Like when we went and rated the voice actors, maybe just the character of Aang is just, it's hard. I don't know.
Yeah, Chris, he's not some Korra. You can't just pull anybody off the street to do that job. Kidding. Sorry, Janet. Yeah. Just kidding, Janet. Just kidding.
How dare
Janet listens. Janet's, I know she listens. Yeah.
I would love it if Janet listened. Even if she listened quietly, and she's like, I don't tell anyone that listens to podcasts because I can't promote other Avatar podcasts.
One thing that's worth pointing, we complained about the cactus juice joke earlier, which they write it in later, and it's painfully stupid. But what makes that, again, maybe you shouldn't connect the two, but what makes that bad is that they make other allusions to things in the original show way better. So like the pebble, like when Toph hits Sokka in the distance of the pebble, you don't even see it. And to me, that's the booger scene, right? That's the booger.
They almost did it twice.
Yeah. And so that to me is, it was natural. It was funny. It was still like a clear, in the words of Fat Neil, a ghoulish reference to it. No. Whereas then, like, to go from that level of kind of creative thinking to just shoving in this stupid line so poorly. Anyway.
It was not good.
It was a shocking juxtaposition. I think that's across these two episodes. I don't remember for sure.
It is also hard to play drunk.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I watched the recent Supergirl movie, which is fine.
That's the nicest thing I've heard anyone say about that movie so far. But for what it's worth, I value your opinion more than the other ones I've heard.
The thing is, I might be biased because it's based off of this comic book, which I think is probably one of the best comic books written in the past 10 years, called Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow. Such a great comic book. But in it, Kara, Supergirl, goes to planets with red suns. Because she can only get drunk on planets with red sun because it negates her power. And so the actress has to act drunk, and it is hard that drunk. Yeah. It just is. Yeah. They do it in the community. When did we recently talk about
it? We talked about it.
Okay.
Scorsese drank with De Niro, you're going to drink with me, however, I'll bet so I don't remember.
You have to deliver a
believable performance. And then he wakes up and he's literally asleep in the top drawer of the dresser. But notice, Chris, to your point, most of what we see on the screen of them being, they don't have to act drunk, right? They essentially skip over it because it's hard.
Yeah. But the animation, you're going to have Sokka do a worm. And freak out and like see stuff and like you can have his eyes go bold or whatever.
Yeah, it's way more liberating.
So literally stick the top. Yeah. So that's one of the great things the animation can do.
Yeah. Just like I said, it's a weird like creative shift from like, oh, look at that. There's a nice nod to that bit. Or even again, like the Tales of Bossing say to like pick things. I was like, oh yeah, that's the nod to this moment or what have you. To then, it's the quenchiest. Like, oh, stop.
Yeah. I don't think anyone likes that line. I've seen everyone just be like, this line.
It's not even a good MTG card, Chris. It's a worthless MTG card. Nobody would play that.
Yeah. One thing I do want to call out is that, like, I'll call that out later. Never mind. Switching gears here. One thing I love, really love about this adaption is the changes to Iroh. Like, Iroh's not a fully formed character like he is. And this one shows it. Like, Iroh, that the Earthbend lady comes up, be like, never forget, like, what the Fire Nation did. And, like, she puts all the names of everybody into the walls. And Iroh has to see, like, visually, Iroh has to see his atrocities put out in front of him.
Chris, that was holy one of the crap. Most emotional parts of the whole season, and it was just like half of a line. I mean, kind of as a compliment, but kind of as a detriment to other people. It's like, yeah, it's like half of a line and, you know, a whole scene. But like that actor, first of all, that actor crushed it. He made me feel things. I don't remember his name.
I think it was a girl.
But he gets beaten over the head this whole season. He does make me feel things. Good for him.
Yeah.
So great scene. Great and, like, addition.
It's such a different Iroh. Like, I understand that this Iroh is way different than the Fuddy Lovey uncle who has knowledge for wisdom for days and everything.
I mean, this one feels real.
But to show an Iroh who has to fully have redemption and go, like, they're showing us Iroh's redemption arc that he had before he came back, right after Lieutenant's death. Like, they're showing his redemption arc right now, like, parallel to Zuko. And I think that's interesting that, like, usually, you know, Iroh's here and Zuko's over here. Right now, they're kind of going right with each other. And, like, they're diverging. Should have been called Crossroads of Destiny. And they're diverging at the end of this, at the end of this season.
Why would you say it, Chris? I don't understand the connection. It's, nope, Chris. Instead, it's the water falls, the stones emerge.
Or something broken.
Someplace the last safe.
Some, don't put some in your title anywhere. Just something, somewhere. Somebody.
It makes me think of somebody is it John love? Mulaney talking about the saying, it's neither here nor there.
I have beef with that quote with that because I don't know if I've heard John Mulaney say that.
It may not be John Mulaney, but it's not an original Sean thought. That's all.
Okay. I thought this is the original Chris Locke. I've had it for at least 10 years now. The quote is neither here nor there. To me, makes no sense.
It doesn't.
Because if we don't establish where there is everywhere that's not here. That's, so it cannot be here, but it has to be there. Because everywhere else is there.
The two terms,
unless we establish that there is a specific spot.
Without additional context, the two terms are mutually exclusive. Got to be one or the other.
Yeah. Unless this thing just doesn't exist.
And then it's nothing. Just shut up about it. We don't want to hear it. This is a nothing. You're a nothing from nowhere. The movie The Big Green, where they're nothings from nowhere. And then the one little girl's like, we're not the nothings from nowhere. We're the Elma nothings. And that's one of the best Disney movie lines ever written.
All right. Then we get... John Jong. That was a cool surprise. Like, I like being
more Iroh, like, confrontation. It's more Iroh confrontation.
I think that's the next episode. In this one, John just introduced and Zuko goes to warn him that, like, oh hey, someone's coming to jump. But yeah, we'll get to that. Yep. Then Toph finds out about her parents' stuff. I guess it's fine. It's just another conflict thing. It's a little bit more.
That one's going to pay off.
It does.
That one's going to pay off next season.
Yeah, I think
that's going to have a good, interesting flip somewhere. So that one I like. Katara's I'm fine with. You know, that's fine.
Yeah. One of the, I think a great change is the haiku battle. That was great.
I think it was less. I'm going to go on record saying I don't love the haiku bit from the original. I do like it here. It serves a purpose. It's a little funnier. It's a hair too long. That's my only – that's a nitpick level thing. It's a hair too long.
I think – I get that.
But
yeah.
Better. I agree. It serves a purpose and it's less awkward. Or in this one, it's awkward on purpose, like when he's having to count syllables against somebody doing it naturally. Like, it feels so much more natural here.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, again, actor's doing, Sokka actor, doing a great job.
He plays a good, confident dummy.
Yeah. Oh, another Iroh thing. Oh, yeah. This episode's has a lot to tell us about. So you say, Iroh comes across the mugger, And,
you know what? That one, it's funny. It's not as amusing, but it is maybe a hair more touching.
But I think so. It is much less amusing.
Cause you don't get to see I don't know how you'd work that in though. I think they could have maybe the whole like, well, your stance is wobbly. I think they still could have worked that in, but it's more touching probably.
But this, I don't think you do it this episode because I was dealing with some deep stuff.
Yeah, he can't be corrected about your posture.
This is the correct way you kill someone. Oh, why do I know this? Why do I know effective ways to kill people? Because I'm a murderer.
This is a place where it could have been as a simple a nod as like just Iroh just glances like your stance is very unbalanced. You know, you're not even come here, sit down. So, you know. Just it could have been a half of a line, just as like a recognition of that moment. But
or he could have went darker of like, oh, your stance is unbalanced. You know, if I was you, I would be able to, you know, you got to put the knife to the throat.
Yeah,
or right to the throat or somewhere. Not like
and you gotta
like
mean if you cut someone's ear.
Like if you the way your knife is positioned, if it stabbed me, it will not hit any vital organs.
Yeah, I think
now if you're gone, that's either way, it couldn't have been comedic. I don't
probably
think.
Not. It would have had to be forlorn at best.
Oh, blue spirit stuff. This is where we get the blue spirit and painted lady that Sean loves so much.
Why
Zutara.
Not?
Zutara.
Let histories collide.
I think I called this that they were going to do a little bit more Zutara stuff.
You did. You absolutely did. And they did.
Mind.
They did. I don't have a problem with it so far here, Chris. As far as just like, you know, setting the ball on the tee for the Zutara shippers and then later just get pulled off the tee, like Lucy and Charlie Brown style, because it's not going to happen. They're just putting a little more meat on that bone. I don't have an issue with any added Zutara moments here, I don't think. Natural.
To end up Iroh's story, so at the beginning of there's one part of the episode where Iroh walks by that tree and it's like he can't face that tree for some reason. Or go there. And then later he finds out like there's people I can help. And then he goes back to the tree, the kind of famous tree of where Iroh sings Leaves from the Vine. And in his line, I think it's great of like, you know, there's people I can help here. If only I could have helped you. I think that's a great preface of the line that he says in the original.
I think it's also a really powerful human feeling to not think that like, just because you don't feel like you can't change the entire world that you shouldn't be doing the right things in the moment and in the space that you're in anyway. I think it's a very potent and poignant human moment that I really like.
Yeah. And I think that's most of the episode.
I think enough. I think you can know that both Zuko and Katara and also Jet face emotional turmoil about helping these Fire Nation refugees in Ba Sing Se. And it is adds a layer of intrigue that feels okay.
Yeah. Next episode, which is titled 10,000 Things.
I'm okay with
this. I like some of the Team Avatar. Yeah. I like some of the Team Avatar bits at the beginning of this episode. I think it's kind of good, just a little banter, Team Avatar banter. They're trying to figure out how to get to the library and whatnot. Let's see what all happens.
They essentially have to sneak into the outer ring unperturbed, untouched, unseen.
Unnoticed,
yeah, inconspicuously. They, you know, I don't mind the MacGuffin that this library lives in a thinning veil space between the spirit world and the physical world. I have no issue with that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
The thing is, it's always kind of iffy either way, because like even in the original, the owl is, Wang Chitong is like, I'm taking this back to the spirit world, but it's physically moving. It's not like one of the things that just vanishes.
Yeah, it's going somewhere.
And goes, yeah, so like, it's going somewhere. And so like that term of like a spirit scar or something, or just like a, you know, the veil being lifted, I'm good with and I'm fine with, and it's sensical to me.
It is at a minimum, I would say it is a plot convenience that it happens to be right there. That is an inescapable truth. And then going back to your theme earlier, we maybe lose some of the grandeur, some of the bigness that it's right here in the city, as mm-hmm. opposed to a desert adventure that's not entirely about the Wang Chitong Library, but that obviously has some big impactful implications that now we don't have. So it contributes to that feeling. But other than that, to be fair, Christmas might be my third favorite episode.
Okay. I like this episode too. I like the episode a lot.
It's impactful. There's action-y. It looks cool. The library itself looks cool.
Yes. Yeah. Library looks freaking great. Like, they do a good job doing, especially when Wang Chitong goes down and like he flies into the, to it. Ah, that was a great shot.
I like the, so for as forced as Jet kind of turning mirror being bad at the beginning feels to me personally, I think that this like re-entry into the side of having some hope and good and optimism, I think it's kind of convincing. Like, they give him the out to let go, and he's like, no, you got me hooked. All right, come on. Like, it feels natural. So I like this turn for Jet. I like this end better for Jet, personally.
Interesting. Interesting.
He definitely deserves to die more in this one. But nope, this cool episode. I don't know how much time we would want to spend on the details of this episode. That's not true.
Scared.
There's some really cool details in here. The one I do want to allude to is that I do hate Professor what's his name,
Professor Z,
being the narc. That kind of annoyed me.
So it did annoy me at first, and then on my second watch, I noticed that anytime he's talking to Sokka about knowledge, he's like, "Oh yeah, we're both knowledge seekers. Like we connect on that." Like, they never talk about the war, really. Mm-hmm. Like, even, and then, and like, they never let him in on the plan. Well, the original plan is like, hey, we just need to find out when the comet is coming. Like, that way we can protect ourselves of when the comet is coming. It's not necessarily to be, against someone. It's just we need to figure out when the comet is coming. And so, even when, so he's constantly about, when he's even talking to Sokka, just about, oh, knowledge and knowledge and I love knowledge. Like knowledge is for the sake of
he's war agnostic.
It.
And he doesn't even care about the protection part, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, he just wants, even when they're in the library, he's like, oh, I just want to look at this. Like, hey, we're on a mission here to save lives. And Sokka's like, I can just go ahead and do this. Yeah. I would like that very much. Just go. I will be here. And so I think on the second rewatch, I bought his betrayal more. It's funny. One of the things I like about this episode is I had a hint. I feel like I had a sense of like, someone's going to betray someone. Like, it's going to be Jet. And I think, I don't know if it was this episode or the previous episode. I was like, this guy, like, I think I said it while we were watching.
You
I was
did.
Like,
you
I could kind of betray vibes from him. And then that went away after a while because him and Sokka were like just so vibing. And so to get the betrayal vibes here, I thought it was a good change.
I thought we were going to see it sooner, like when you said it initially, and then it didn't happen sooner, so it might have been previous episodes. So then I felt safe, and then I was betrayed.
Mm, yeah. One highlight, love Sokka's moment in that place where he sees the moon and stuff. I thought that was a great emotional moment. Adder does a good job. I did not think coming into this review that I was going to speak that much about how good Sokka is this season. Also, just visually, I think that room
cool
was
room.
Really cool.
They made me think of the City of Metal. The Metal Clan.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what it made me think of, which just fun. It probably isn't related anyway, but just fun.
The big things this episode is... Oh, go ahead.
No, you're going to do it right now.
Big things episode, we get to see past avatars. We get to see Kyoshi talk with Toph. And honestly, this passes one of my rules of writing of, like, if something's cool, don't let knowledge get in the way of cool stuff, necessarily. Don't let logic get in the way of really cool stuff. And I like seeing Toph talk to Kyoshi. I don't care. I'm a sucker for that.
Chris, this makes way more sense to me. You're halfway in the spirit world already. You're not just by a shrine. This makes infinitely more sense to me personally. I'm going to file this under missed opportunity. I think they all could have seen past avatars and had cool conversation. We could have seen more past avatars, and that this was the perfect place for it to happen. And I'm going to say moderate. I'm going to say moderate missed opportunity. So if the other missed opportunities are major, this is a step under that. Because I want to see more. And this is the perfect place to do it. These regular ass humans, pardon my language, it's getting late, in this library where it does make sense to me, especially near their stuff in the library. Missed opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I'm a sucker for Yang Chen. Mm-hmm. And also, this actress is great.
Yeah, she kind of crushed as Yang Chen. She felt right.
Yeah. It's funny enough, when I was writing a... Okay, wait. Never mind. I've fan cast her in my head about different things, or use her image for a character. Wait, why did I do that? Oh, I get it now. I remember. I was making a love interest for Zetto, and I'm following the fan theory that love interests look like their past lives. Or no, love interests look like their future lives. Hmm. Yeah. And so while I was making this love interest, I used this actress in one of my things as an inspiration for it. I wouldn't go with a different actress, but she was one of them. Anyway, she's good. She's also great. And what is that show called on Apple? I forgot. Anyway,
I don't know, but you said Apple, so it can't be good. Get out of here, Apple. Just kidding.
No, it's a Severance. That's the show. And then Wan Ching Tong deep throats the professor, and Jet dies, and Appa gets taken.
It sounds like when people use the phrase "raw dog" without realizing it's actual. Anyway, yeah. Like that up. Wan Ching Tong looks cool.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Great, yeah. That's cool. Also, I love the Blue Spirit map. For some reason, the Blue Spirit looks better this season.
I think it,
than last season. I know they changed the mask, yeah. But just in general, it looks a lot better. And Zuko decides not to take Aang, which causes his metamorphosis to start. And yeah, that's kind of the episode.
I like that the Blue Spirit mask looks like it was intended to be like an ornate mask of ceremony that now you're wearing on this black outfit. That I just really like that contrast, that it's not at all a simple mask. It's cool. Yep, cool episode, Chris. I like this one quite a bit, especially once I accepted the plot convenience as that. This is plot convenience. I get it.
True. It did. It did take some clock of the ending.
Like a shock at first. All right, the episode... like, I get it. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So this is one thing that... So the end of the episode is Aang is losing... Aang loses Appa. And this is one part that I think was not done well, especially compared to the original. And not just because it was his original. Like, when Aang loses Appa, it's not... necessarily the rage, that's part of it, right? He goes in the avatar state, is triggered. But when you see the avatar state and Katara has to drag him, pull him down to earth because she is his tether to the world, and like she hugs him, and like that's the emotion that's missing, and he cries to see a fully avatar state, the most powerful being in the world, and the glowing eyes are kind of a symbol of that. And to see tears come down the eyes of those, that hits emotionally to where, like, yeah, you're the most powerful person in the world, but like you lost your best friend.
I am not saying,
and your other best friend is trying to, yeah,
I'm not saying that you have to do everything one for one I am saying that's a wildly potent moment from the original show that probably could have been recreated in some form instead of not at all to useful effect. And I missed it. It's a very, very, very potent display of Katara's human power over Aang's uncontrollable spiritual side. You know, it shows like where Aang is at in his journey. It shows where Katara is in her relationship with Aang. It touches on a lot of very important points very potently.
Yeah.
And here you get none of
it. I think, yeah.
None.
Yeah.
Nada.
It feels really lacking. Yeah. And that was, I think, very disappointing.
So that's a big...
Especially you could have...
It is my first biggest missed opportunity, but I am going to tie it in to later too. Like this plus a later bit together create my biggest missed opportunity that is related to this.
Okay. That was unfortunate.
Yep.
Also, I think his he could have been destroying stuff. Like in season one, where he finds Magyatso's ashes, like they make that moment bigger than the original. Like in the original, he just kind of floats a little. It's funny, they kind of flip flopped it, which is, I guess you'd be more upset finding Gyatso's ashes than you would with Appa being lost for a second. But nonetheless, both should be big.
Both should big, be big. Huge, yeah, go big stroke. Both. Why not? Why not big both? We're Netflix. We're live action. Yeah. Let's do stuff, man. Whatever. Should HBO have done this, Chris? Should this be an HBO show?
I honestly think after season one, they're like, listen, we did pretty good, but your budget is now this, and go ahead and do both seasons. That way we can just finish it and have it. And so it's like, in that case, it's like, all right, I would rather have something than nothing. Also, I'm speculating here, but I would rather have something than nothing.
I would, but if this something isn't as good as the original something, and then I never want...
Never be as good as the
okay,
original.
Okay, but if it's not even good enough that I never watch it again, because...
You will watch it again. I'll make you watch it again. We're gonna...
I'll probably watch it again this week, if we're being honest. But there's gotta be... Because there's gotta be... I have to be allowed to hold them accountable beyond just the, well, it's this or nothing. It's like, nope, you missed a huge opportunity to be way better with minimal effort.
Yeah, well, I think some of the, like, I think they had some type of budget. I think they probably had more budget restrictions going into these two seasons than they did in the first one.
And we have to be allowed to say, yep, and it resulted in a shittier product. And we have to feel comfortable saying that and not just being like, well, if it's budget, I guess I'll give it another pass. Like, nope, there's an infinite amount of media on the internet that I have access to right now. And this is competing for
some things. We give Remembrances a little credit because of their budget.
That was a much more sympathetic story. Also, a much more sympathetic story.
Like, do we fire people or do we give them? I'm being speculative of the budget and stuff. So we do know in Remembrance's case, that was the case.
They're not night and day different stories in terms of the sympathetic context here, but the real difference is one we know for sure. And it is better than Netflix just being like, I just don't think it would have taken a whole lot more budget for when he's going up. Like, all right, add a little more emotion and tears to his face and make Katara pull him back down.
No, that part required the tears and Katara putting him down. That requires
go ahead and
I think not much extra. That part I think is dumbfounded not to
go
do
ahead
that.
And chop some library budget off, because the library, Wan Shi Tong, the big metal clay and style room, those looked amazing. Can you chop a few bucks off of that and make Aang cry for me, please?
I don't think you need a budget. Just grab the $5 bottle of whatever and make him cry. Yeah,
whatever.
they be CGI-ing tears some days, though. There's one scene in here where I'm like, oh, yeah, they I don't think the actor can force tears. Which is fine. Some actors can't cry on cue. I can cry on cue.
I can't even cry when I'm sad sometimes. I don't mean that masculine. It's just one of those things.
I can cry on cue very easily. My imagination is... I went to my uncle's funeral recently, and like I was crying at the funeral, and most of the crying was just me going through situations of like, oh, this is my funeral. What would be happening?
Yeah, and that's not to demean your uncle's death as much as like,
yeah,
it's not like
I was doing analysis of like, 80% of my crying is figmentations of my imagination.
It's not a masculine thing. I think that crying is very healthy, and I think you should feel vulnerable in front of people. And yet, because I can't remember the last time I have. But on the plus side, really? I've not had immediate family members pass away recently. You know, for example, the stimuli have not been there, which, anyway.
Yeah.
Chris, now that we're an hour 45 in, how about episode 6?
Well, so we were getting episode, yeah. So episode 6 picks up where episode 5. I'm sorry, episode 7 picks up where episode 6 left off, and he comes right out of the Avatar state. They're like, don't leave the cliffhanger of him going to the Avatar state, and he comes right after. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's Team Avatar, mad at Toph at the beginning of episode 6 than he is at the end of episode 5. So like, it picks up right where it left off, but he's more mad at her. As if it like took him a while to work up instead of overreacting initially.
He needs to get over the top thing. I get Aang's even in the original. I get Aang's original thing of like, you didn't like
Appa,
like
you didn't say that's a big reaction to a thing.
That is like you didn't have time to think about the situation.
Yeah, I get it.
But he continues to bring this up even later in their stupid, which we'll get to it. And there's stupid team
been over this.
Argument.
You've solved this, Aang. You yourself have seen the logic in Toph's choices.
Yeah.
You're being an a-hole. And in the original, when Aang is like 10, that might be excusable, but not with you're an 18-year-old man.
Just kidding.
Anyway, parable.
They make a plan to sneak in. I love the story with the you know, Iroh has the story giving a job to the robber, and I thought the robber, the mugger, was going to make a great cup of tea, and I thought, oh, that would have been great. He found his calling. No, he made a bitter cup.
That's better.
But Iroh's like, no, Iroh's like, no, like we're gonna drink this and we'll remember how this feels, and when you make a great one, you'll look back and be like, you'll see how far you come. I'm like, oh, that's great. Yeah.
You get the Earth King plan, which is very risky. It's very risky. But well enough executed on screen. Their plan to infiltrate and see the Earth King. I think that's good.
There was a little bit of part of me that was like, oh, are they just gonna infiltrate the way they did in the original? Which is like that's also a big moment in the original where they attack the Earth Kingdom, and like, oh, it's just Team Avatar versus everything. That would have cost some money.
This is a place where I get like, okay, let's not have half an episode of them fighting the Dai Li. I get it. And I appreciate the way that they went. Again, maybe a hair plot convenience, but I was completely fine with it. You get, let's A story, B story, or well, without picking precedent, but this line of the story will kind of go the whole way through. I even like the way that they have this revelation with this weak Earth King, and you kind of see you get the Earth King's turmoil, and then you get the, you know, initially he's like, oh, it's going to make me throw up. And then Katara has a parable, and then he's ready to listen. And then you get the
Earth King is cheating. He's,
yeah.
Mm,
it hurts. It's Aziz Ansari when he's upset about anything. And then
I just sound more like Aziz Ansari there than cheating.
There's a moment earlier where you sounded like Abed sounding like Troy. And I don't even remember what you said. I just thought you sound like Abed imitating Troy. Sometimes I like Opal and then I don't.
That was some great acting in that episode.
Love it.
Great acting.
Also, you know, yeah, that's a whole different conversation for different day. But anyway, I like the Earth Kings up and down. I like they've got him. They've got him listening. And I do think of all the opportunities that are missed, I do think they do pretty decent with the Longfang revelation, let's call it. It's not a betrayal, I guess. I guess it is. But I do think they do okay with the revelation, and I think they do a nice job of allowing his story to let you see all the different dots connected of where he got this information and that information to craft his story. I think they do a nice job. So one of the better things that were, or things that were done a little bit better or more elaborate and thoughtful than the animated show, I think. Personally.
Yeah.
Although I would say the Azula Tylee May part of this, like, well, where's the Puppet King, like having a full name for it and everything. I was like, it's a little corny, but whatever.
Shadow Ruler.
Shadow Ruler is okay, fine. It's a little.
I mean, I like that they were able to decipher it.
I don't. That feels so. I don't know. They sounded so deterministic about it. It's like, well, come on. There's a little gray area in there. Whatever. It's fine. It didn't bug me at least.
They reached a conclusion with about 50% evidence.
Yeah, like that. Like, I needed a little more foundation. But, I mean, I don't know. It was a nice way to get them inside the walls.
Yeah. All right. And then we get to this honestly might be some of the worst writing. Some of the worst moment in Avatar history besides the movie that shall not be named, The Last Airbender, that I will name it. the teen drama stuff. I think a lot of this conflict, I get oftentimes in writing, you know, you're taught, you know, there needs to be tension and conflict. And with everything in life, there's balance to it. One thing, lots of their reasonings and to be mad at each other, or even the reasons for being mad at each other, I think are flat or either unsubstantiated, and they just keep arguing in a circle and just keeps going on and on. It's like watching.
It's like a high school play, man. It's what it feels like. Like you have to wait on everybody to take their turn to say the next mean thing. It feels very unnatural.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the writing. So like Toph. I think Toph's is going to pay off. I actually think he's going to be one of the better one. Aang over trusting Longfang, like I get it, but they also,
I get all of their reasonings for what they did. Like I don't question any of it. Like Sokka being like, well, Toph's secret isn't my secret to tell. Like Aang being like, well, yeah, I trusted Longfang.
Yeah, it seemed like a trustworthy guy.
Yeah, Katara being like, well, yeah, you know, I was just going out and helping people. Yeah. Like
the part that
all the reasons for doing it were fine, but their reasons for being mad at each other was just
their dramatic overreactions to the way the argument is playing out and then not coming down. It feels super teen angsty, which like, oh, okay, I get their teens. Like, no, but they're not idiots. We're talking about people have been through a lot together to this point. The only one that they really feel justified, and it's just because I feel strongly about that little story beat, is that they know Toph the least, and her crime, that's not even her crime, but it is the most egregious. Like, your parents are making war machines for the Fire Nation. Like, that to me hit the hardest and would have the greatest effect of, okay, fine, well, my mom's in town. I don't need this crap. I don't even know you guys that well. I'm going home. And that's the one that felt the most valid to me.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of them.
But then Aang, again, blaming Toph for losing Appa.
Aang, like, shut up. God. What would you have done, Aang? Would you have gone into like a weak half Avatar state? And
yeah. Like, did you want me to leave you there? You all won't be standing here to argue at me.
Get deep-throated by an owl. that part sucks. Yep.
Yeah, it really sucks. It really does. Like that, I didn't mention Sinatra review, but I feel like season one has, for the most part, has higher highs but lower lows. But in this season, a little bit more consistent, except for that moment. That's the lowest moment.
That's fair.
Everything else, I don't think reaches that moment. But yeah, that was pretty bad.
Nothing reaches entire Spirit Knife plotline level lows except for this one moment.
To me, this is way. I mean, I'm just silly. Like,
the Spirit Knife plays a really silly big role.
Silly and contrived and forced, which this is like not silly, but it's contrived and forced, and it's just.
But this resolves quickly. It's a whole arc, you know.
I guess I kind of get their reasonings for this. Well, not
no,
really.
No. You could try, but you don't. You stop it. No, I agree with you. I think the season one.
You have my knife. Like, what? Your knife?
Season one has some, like, lower lows where it's like, all right, some of the writing's rough and then the acting's rougher. And this season, some of those things get mitigated by better acting, better bending looking appearance, things like that. So I agree.
Then we get the moment with Iroh and the White Lotus. Great freaking moment with him and John Jong. Love seeing just that connection between Iroh and John Jong. And they're like, John Jong was the general to lieutenant, and John Jong left his stance or whatever and left his soldiers to die, and one of them was lieutenant. Ah. And then John Jong asked him, like, well, what would, you know, the Dragon of the West would burn me alive for saying that. Like, what would you say? And I was like, I'll ask your forgiveness for me ordering you to do all those terrible things.
Another one of the probably a top two or three. Yeah, we'll get to that in a couple of weeks, right? But a top moment for sure. That exact moment you just described, that did not let down. Again, Iroh having to confront his worst nightmares head on. His dead son, the people whose lives he ruined in other ways inadvertently. Having to stare him straight in the face in the name of progress. He does that. And then he takes that knowledge. Actually, I might be out of order here, but I'm going to keep going anyway. But to take these knowledge and these convictions that he has that he's learned in the past episode or two back and confront Zuko with this choice without telling him that you have to live a certain way, but just that, I won't butcher it, but just the Batman speech of not who we are, but what we do that defines a speech, and to bring that back to Zuko, which is also a great moment. I think that's after.
Yeah, and my point before about, like, Iroh and Zuko being parallel to each other, and then they're going to diverge. Like, Iroh, he says, like, I was trying to teach you how to be lieutenant, and I realized, like, that was wrong of me. Like, you need to be your own person. And so, to me, like, Iroh at first was trying to, like, Iroh's probably idea of what lieutenant would be just Iroh, right? And, like, if he was trying to make Zuko that, like, that would be a mistake. Like, you know, Zuko, you should be your own man. And that's a really, it was really, really strong.
Did you say that their destinies are at a crossroads of some type?
Or it's just something broken.
Or it's something broken. No, this is the one, just to clarify, though, we do like this title, Parable of Two Dragons. That's acceptable. We get it. And then they actually tell the Parable of Two Dragons, which is way too long. Azula actually the name fits way better as a metaphor for Zuko and Iroh than it does for the actual story told.
Well, yeah, I think the thing is, it was a metaphor for Azula and Zuko. But yeah, it was
that's
so
funny.
Long.
I took it as Iroh. And, you know, the Dragon of the West came,
really?
Because they said the Dragon of the West forbade him and showed him changing away from that person, right? So he was the other dragon. Interesting, though.
Oh.
Good for us for interpreting.
But yeah, it was a long parable.
Oh my God,
it's like, I think you said it, like, Jesus parables are pretty short.
We quote that book or that chapter, you know, one bit at a time, and it does the job. And then, Chris, it made me think of the Rush Hour 2, the Golden Dragon story, and then I had to go watch both Rush Hour movies the next day. Sorry, the first two.
I did pay more attention to Azula's little speech or parable the second time, and I'm like, you could have... One thing, and then they gave names to the dragons, which made it hard to follow. She just said the small dragon and the weak dragon, the strong dragon. Like, well, you gotta make this easy to digest. I know that sounds like I'm lazy, but
no, it's a parable. It's kind of supposed to get something much like a montage, and how it's supposed to be a shortened, demonstrative piece of a longer thing. That's what a parable is to a story.
Episode 7 starts with a flashback. Aang meeting Appa, and it's really cute. And we were trying to follow which edible is Appa.
So it's like picking the rock under the hat.
Let's see. You kind of see where the character's at. Talking with their mom. Her mom drugs her. I do like when she wakes up, Toph's like, "You poison me?" And her mom's like, "Calm down. It's just like milk poppy. Like, I take it every night to go to sleep.
Just some opium, kid. Get over it."
Jeez. They go until. there is one continuity error, Sean. If I tell you this, would it make you hate it more? Or, probably. When.
I need to know.
When Katara and Zuko gets captured and they're put into a cell, Katara is wearing her Painted Lady disguise, right? And in one scene, and she's talking to Zuko. A scene later, Katara is just wearing her normal Water Tribe clothes.
Okay.
So either Katara just carries her clothes with her, don't know why she would, and she changes in front of Zuko, or it's just a continuity error, which is...
My gut would have said regular air waterbender clothes are underneath the Painted Lady one. And just take it off or something like
that. Wouldn't be able to, because you can see her shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
In it. So I doubt she's wearing her... I thought the two at first, and then, anyway.
I'm comfortable saying that does not impact my feelings very much.
It doesn't either. It's just kind of... I think they were just like, hey, we like seeing Katara and Ralph, especially at the end of the episode.
I find that issue neither here nor there.
Somewhere. Azula kills all the generals.
It is actually. It catches you off guard, but kind of in a good way of like, this TV show does have emotions and evoke them sometimes. Not emotions. Evokes emotions.
It's funny. I was waiting for her moment that she had in the original where she talks to the Daily agents and she like is inspiring kind of to them. And that gets them all on her side. And I think this is just as good.
Pretty
just
cool.
Like, nah, I'm just going to kill all the generals. You have no generals. You really have no army. And you've already put me in control. And also my people are going to come in anyway.
It's also kind of important because to this point, you don't actually get to see Azula succeed in combat, really. Like, I can't think of a fight in here that she wins outright. I was like, no, we need a reminder, a demonstration. That's a good place for it.
Yeah.
Just knocked out an army's worth of generals in a snap of a finger.
Aang and Iroh go down to the place. Katara and Zuko have their one-on-one, which I think, listen, I'm not a Zutara shipper. That's clearly known, but the writers of the show probably is. I think they have actually a great moment here. It's a little bit longer moment than in the original.
It makes me feel
when Katara
makes me feel more connected to the moment. Gets me bought it. I'm still not buying it.
There's a scene.
Like, it's still not going to happen, but they're doing a nice job of making those characters have an impactful relationship.
Yeah, it's funny. Anytime the actress for Katara is asked about Zutara, she's like, no.
Ew, gross.
But they connect on a couple different things. I think the one change in the dialogue, because Katara's talking about like Zuko's face being the face that she sees when she thinks about like the Fire Nation. And Zuko says something to the sense to the effect of like, you hate my face, but you don't hate it. Like that was great. There was lots of great added dialogue to the scene.
Makes me think of that when my brother went to see the Grogu movie and he doesn't know anything about Star Wars. It's like, I was having a good time and everybody around me clearly wasn't. And somebody told Jordan, it's like, nobody hates Star Wars movies more than Star Wars fans.
Yeah. Well, no one hates this live action adaptation more than Avatar fans.
Yeah.
Like, normal people are just like, yeah, it's good. Like, my boss watched it with his son and he liked it. And I was like, oh, yeah, you should watch the original. Yeah. I don't think they ever got around to watching the original.
And especially if you watch it in reverse, which, Chris, like, we can't recreate that. So, yeah, go watch this one. If you like it, then go watch the other one and enjoy it. Don't dwell on it too much.
Yeah. Now, Sean, here comes one of my favorite moments. Abed.
Yes.
The side talking. It was so Abed. Like, so I cracked up laughing even the second time watching it. And he talks about all his plans. The time where he's like, then I had to discard this. Like, it was so Abed doing Nicolas Cage and
I'm a sexy cat.
It was hilarious.
That was a really touching moment, and it was at a point where the episode needed, or maybe even the season needed something. We haven't had a good laugh in a minute in this episode, in the season even. That's good.
All right. I do like the plan. This is unrelated to that. I'm just looking now. I do like Azula's plan of like offering up her general to the Earth Kingdom disguised as Kyoshi warriors, like just to build trust and stuff. And then they get him out of prison and he's just running stuff. Also, I like that little love interest for Azula.
Yeah. As a little side thing that may or may not okay if it does, okay if it doesn't.
Yeah.
All right. If it keeps us from having to have a beach episode, then good.
Nah. Oh, they're having a beach episode, Sean.
Do you really think so? No, I don't think so.
They'll have that moment, I think.
They might. they will find a way to represent what seems like familial bonding and relationship rebuilding between Azula and Zuko. They will find a way to seem like that's happening.
Yeah. They're down in the prisons, and Judy has a really good point. Then pretty much everything kind of goes the same. Well, no, Zuko helps him find Appa. That's a little bit different. Toph breaks out of her metal bending, which I think is completely fine.
That's good.
I think people probably would have complained. Like, sometimes with changes, I like to imagine if the original did it first and the adaption did it, that, like, people complain, like, oh, why didn't, like, how did Toph, like, Toph shouldn't have got captured by mom. But like, if you look at the original, how was Toph even captured by those two anyway? She should have sensed them coming, like from a mile away. How did she even get? How did they get the jump on her when she has seismic sense? They're carrying around a big metal door or a big metal cage.
If you're outdoors in nature and there's lots of vibrations and stuff going on over, listen, I imagine it gets harder. Maybe now.
So her getting poisoned, I think, makes not poisoned.
It's Chris, it's not poison, it's just opium. Calm down. Don't tell me you haven't ever opiumed your kids. I actually know if that's what's milk or not.
I don't know. Yeah. Then Aang gets reunited with Appa, which doesn't feel nearly as good as the original.
Because he hasn't been gone as long, and you already...
Yeah. And the original is like everyone...
Part of the original is
also,
the
moment of
like Appa's lost days and seeing Appa's journey, which I don't know how you'd recreate it, but that is part of the pain. Like, you see the pain that Appa's going through alongside knowing the pain that Aang is going through.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, but.
Also, I think it helped that everyone missed Appa. Like, this feels like only Aang misses Appa, but the original is like they all jump on him, like, Appa! Yeah. Like, and also, just him being gone for so long.
Whereas in this one, everyone else is just kind of like, yep, what's next, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll turn up.
Azula and Zuko have a fight. And this is an interesting thing about Azula to me compared to the original. I think this Azula is like, I think she actually cares more for Zuko. And I was curious for her mom, like, this end here where she's like, listen, I, like, I don't care to kill you. Like, I don't want to kill you. And she, like, she's genuine of, like, you can join me or you can stay down here. That's your choice.
I think Ozai being harder on both of them makes the empathy between them feel good.
Yeah. 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 And I actually think it's going to set up in season three to be big. So, like, you know, we end this season with Zuko joining her. Both of them have everything they want and need. And I think instead of Mei and Ty Lee betrayal being the catalyst for her change, I think it's Zuko's betrayal is going to be the catalyst for her derangement. Because she's like, I did what mom told us to do. We stuck together. You're the one that betrayed me. Like, this is not how I act. Like, I went out on a limb for you. No manipulations, nothing. And so I think this has really good setups for next year and her fall of her fall into insanity.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm being sincere when I say good. I hope it actually does pay off. And I hope we get to feel that and enjoy it.
Be optimistic, Sean. Or be
I not. Did. I said I hope. That's what optimism is. If I was a hopeful, no, I said something like, yeah, if it pays off. No, I hope.
I think optimism is slightly higher than hope.
That's fair. Like, hope is, I'm optimism hoping like anyway. This, optimism is, I actually think. Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Okay, well, put me somewhere in between those two.
Optimism.
That sounds better than optimism, actually. That sounds like hope plus optimism.
I know, right? Yeah. Then you have the battle down below, the 2v2, which I think looks great. Like, oh my gosh, when Katara is dragging Azula, for some reason that looks more like drastic than it does in the cartoon. Like, I don't know, like she has her like a rag doll.
Is visceral the right word? Like, you feel it more. It feels kind of crunchier.
Yeah. Yeah. The fight's great. Mm-hmm. Fight's really great.
The cavern's great, even down to the manufactured tilings. No, we decided that was on purpose.
At first, we were like, is that a line? Like, who the heck left a line? And the production was like, oh, it's tile.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
No, someone just came.
We walked back our criticisms appropriately. Happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
No, finally, great fight. This cavern scope felt better to me, right? So if we were disappointed in the arena, this cavern felt more like my brain wanted it to feel, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Aang reaches the Avatar state. It was always cool to see past Avatars. He goes, this is a difference, change. He goes OP, and then he releases up. And I think him not hurting or killing Azula is him not wanting to be like Long Fang. Even Long, or contradicting Long Fang, because there's a scene where Long Fang is like, you're too weak to beat her. Like, you're not like she is. Like, you are too weak. And Aang is proving that, like, no, this isn't weakness of being a good person. I think he, I don't know, in a way learned, tried to just contradict Long Fei and show him that this isn't a weakness. And Azula ends up shooting him in the front, which I'm completely good with. I like the scene of Aang going to OP. I'm completely fine with Azula not kind of cheap-shotting him, because it kind of doesn't make sense in the original. But also, I don't care in the original if it doesn't make sense how Azula somehow moved from point A to point B.
One of those things that ever took me out of the moment, at least. Which is usually, I don't know if that's a good judge or not, but I just, I don't know, if it doesn't break my illusion or whatever, then all right, well, that's fine.
Logic is overrated.
Especially in TV shows.
Yeah. I do really, you know, the ends on a cliffhanger, for some reason on the second watch, it was more emotional with all of them being like, oh, Aang might not, like, there's a point where they think he's dead because he doesn't. Katara's still shaking him. So I think it's a good cliffhanger, and left everyone with like this feeling of like, you know, what's going to be the case. On the first watch, I felt like it wasn't big enough. Like they just lost Ba Sing Se. I felt that on the first watch. But on the second watch, I feel like the real loss is potential loss of Aang. And I felt that more for some reason on the second watch.
I hope that first time watchers, even if they know season three, I hope they still, I hope that hits for them. Chris, let's talk about my third underwhelming thing that I started talking about earlier, and I'm going to tie it together to this one.
Okay.
First and foremost, Aang's avatar state is a hair underwhelming. Just a hair, not a ton. Also, it does just kind of feel like he has a complete mastery of it already. You know, there's not even fire in there, but he's also in perfect control. There's something about that I can't get my head around. And second, what you said about him thinking about Longfang and what Longfang said and trying not to be like Azula, that makes beautiful sense. But there's no indication on screen whatsoever that that is the case. There's no what we the audience see. There's no trigger for Aang's letdown whatsoever. There's not a facial expression from Aang that's like suddenly more thoughtful. There's not a stimulus out in the ether. He just lets down. So for like the second time, we have this avatar state that we could have done more with. So in the library episode and this right here, that they just, what was on screen didn't end in a very satisfactory way, which, okay, that's one thing, was like, but it could have. There was easy options right there. It could have shown any stimulus to make Aang stop and think, which I think should have been Katara trying to talk him down, right? It should have been a little more out of control, and then it should have been Katara talking him down in one or the other, if not both, maybe both. I don't know, or if she did it in the first one, and by the second one, he doesn't need her to talk. He just looks at her and sees her and gets himself back down or something, but it's just, and again, it's not that they did it bad. It was a missed opportunity to me to do something way better. Cause I had never thought of, never would have thought of the Longfang thing until you said it. Cause there's no locus from which, like on screen, from which that thought would come in that moment. It just looks for all the world like he's just like, nah.
I agree with that. Cause I didn't, first time watching, I wasn't thinking Longfang at all until the second time that I was paying more attention, or pick up the different things.
You could never, you can never even prove that was like that wasn't any other, because there's no evidence on screen. Yeah. Even if it's a great theory, it makes less sense.
Yeah. I have canonically big issues with him having this level of mastery of the Avatar State, and I think story wise, I have issues with it, and we'll go future episodes we'll go to like what will change.
That's gonna be fun for this season, I think.
But and again, time back to in the original, when he goes in Avatar State, that felt like a sacrifice because he had to sacrifice Katara, and so there's you know, none of that here, which makes Avatar State feel a little bit more like, yeah, and you always want consequences to your character's decisions. I guess here his decision was not to hurt Azula, and his consequence was
shot. There's no consequence for going into the Avatar State at all, which I just can't get over this hump of mastering the Avatar State and not even knowing firebending, the original element, and you've never created a spark.
This one, I'm not sure. This might just be speculating. I'm not sure if they will explain that Aang's Avatar State currently is not a masked version of it. That eventually they'll go into like, oh no, well, your eyes be attuned to glowing. They probably won't. Because it's definitely not fully mastered. And they didn't really get in. Stuff around Avatar State, I think, should have been more delved into and really should have been a central plot point throughout the whole series. I'll go ahead and say the thing I would change most is that I would introduce one of his arcs across I'll go ahead and say it, because I'm saying it already. I would have introduced I would have, you know, Aang was really mad at the beginning of the episode, and I think you could have been like either not making mad, or if he's upset, he, you know, he's trying to get these people on because he doesn't want to confront the Fire Nation because he might trigger the Avatar Save again and go out of control again. So then you start the season being like, well, Aang, you've learned how to control the Avatar state. He goes through his chakras and stuff, goes through the Katara part. And then at the end of this, he decides to sacrifice Katara. And you can figure out whatever plot points or whatever things to put in there to whoever needs to teach him that or show him that, whether it's the guru or the avatars. But the Avatar state right now is one of the things that he just flips a switch. And, like, there is no cost to that power.
There's no narrative weight to the Avatar state right now other than that it's a weapon. It's a thing that he can wield.
Yeah.
There's no other emotional or narrative hook to it.
Yeah. He mentions it a little bit that he was out of control. But
he can say it, and then we can not see it, and that could be problematic.
But it's almost like... The problem, his current problem is that it's not controlled, but his problem should be, what is the weight of that power? Mm-hmm. And also, like, can I get it under control? Because the weight of that power is so big and grand. And it's just not a consistent narrative.
And I can't stress, I'm going to beat this dead horse. It's not that it's bad or wrong. It's just a missed opportunity to do it better and more interesting. Anyway,
that I think it ends on a good note, and the battle, and I liked her healing them. Oh yeah, we didn't get to.
It's generally a good episode too, for whatever that's worth. I consider this a good episode.
Yeah,
Chris, I am
ratings.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to talk about ratings. Are you excited to talk about ratings?
Yeah, I'm giving mine before I give yours. Before I give yours. I don't know what yours is. Season 1, after my rewatch, I give season 1 an 8.5. I think I was probably like an 8 before. Okay. But this most recent one, I was like, wow, there's lots of really great strong stuff here. 8.5 maybe. This season, I'm giving it 7.5. Maybe it's 7.5. I'm good with 7.5. I enjoyed it fairly a lot. Just the sense of discovery of like, oh, what are they going to do? Are they going to have this character, that character, this plot line? Like, and I think they arranged it pretty well, and pretty good. So yeah, and I think so much stuff improved, the acting, the effects, the fighting, stuff like that. I do think, like I said, the biggest problem is it lacked the emotion. That it really should have had. There's some unforced errors in there. So yeah, I'm giving it 7.5.
Lots of unforced turnovers. I think on season 1, I think I was about exactly a point lower than you, right? So if you started an 8, I probably started a 7. That feels right. This one, I'm going to stay a point, but it's a 6. You know, if I had to bucket it, you know, I liked the audio visuals, again, thinking about acting, how everything looked and felt, it's good. Narratively, I liked the way they rearranged the story, even if some of the writing was really bad. So I'd put a nasty ding on the writing, even if I liked the way the bigger pieces moved around. And then, you know, that X factor, that memorability, is there would be the things, the those big missed opportunities to tell a good, interesting story will always hurt. There will always, this such easy opportunities to tell a better story will always sting. And so I would knock it really hard for that, I think. A 6 represents my feelings pretty accurately, I think.
I feel like, wonder if, that's me just being optimistic. If season 3 is season 3 is like really great, do we look back at season 2 maybe in more favorable thing? Maybe a couple stuff they're setting up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's being a very speculative mystic.
I would be willing to. Yeah, like if you nail season 3, will I allow, you know, some stumbles if you still win the game? Sure. Sure.
It's funny. I think even though season 1 is, I think, is better than season 2.
It is for sure.
I am more excited about the future of the show after this season. So I think they're setting up a lot of great stuff for season 3. A little unrelated or whatever. I still think, though, that this adaption, for what it's worth, is the best anime or animated series to live action adaption of, like, you know, fantasy or anime type of stuff. And it's not close. Well, I'll also say this. I've never watched One Piece, the original, or I watched a
little
bit.
Isn't it weird that you've never watched either, and I just only have the Netflix season to go on? So I can't judge. I can't be a credible source, you know?
I watched like 2 episodes of the live action, and it just didn't do anything for me at all. Like,
that to me will stand in a standalone, like, I'm the outside guy there, right? I'm the non-Star Wars fan of the Grogu movie. It's like, yeah, I dug it. I don't know if I'd recommend it. But...
like, yeah, and to me, this is like so much great stuff in this, like so much of it. For Avatar fans, I think about this in terms of watching this show, this Iroh quote, also just in terms of life in general, of like, if you look for the light in the dark, you'll often find it. But if you look for the dark, that's all you ever see. If you're going in watching the show and you just want to nitpick and point out Eric's little bad thing, then you're not going to enjoy watching. But if you open yourself up to some of the great stuff it has to offer, then I think you'll enjoy it enough. Might enjoy it as much as I do. I don't know. Not to say that the show, you know, the show still deserves lots of whatever valid criticism that you have on it, which I feel like, Sean, for all your criticism has been invalid, and you're lower on it than I am.
We at least try to be constructive here, right? Like, you can't make something better realistically.
Yeah.
Chris, if the third season came out and really crushed and added some missing gratification, you know, maybe it wouldn't make me like change my ratings on season 2, but it would certainly affect my outlook. I've definitely got some broken trust after season 2. Like, it feels like there's fumbles where it's like, how often do you want to keep handing that guy the football? Just to shake up our usual basketball metaphors. And so, I'm more trepidatious after this season. If I didn't know, you know, from you telling me that like season 3 was already filmed, I would worry about what changes they would make after people's reaction to this season, if that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't worry that they wouldn't do it. I would worry that, like, oh, well, the fans didn't like this and that, so we got to react. So it's better, probably, that it's already done. That might be a victory in its own right.
Well, it's a lot better it's already done. The viewership is... it's hard to say. So the viewership for the first 4-day viewing was down 59%. From season 1's first 4 days.
That's pretty steep.
To put that in context, One Piece, which is honestly probably the only comparable I can think of,
that one that
was down.
Just known as garbage, right? Like,
yeah,
the rest are all just universally panned.
Yeah, and also I can't think of another like Netflix show that's in the same realm of these
like
two shows.
Budget,
but One Piece, yeah. One Piece was down 9%, maybe 10%. Okay. So that's so I'm glad they already filmed. I do care about the quality, but I really just want them to tell a complete story.
We've said this before too. You can tell a good story without a huge budget, or honestly without even great production quality. And I stand by that, and therein lies the crux of some of my issues with this one. But I will say, just to reiterate something important to our thoughts throughout this entire process, they do and have made meaningful rearrangements and changes. that are good and valuable and make it a different experience.
Exactly. That's what adaptation should do. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't imagine having, if the live action was like a one for one, like 90% of one for one, they just like took some stuff out. Like, when I'm watching it, am I like, oh, well, I can, like, why am I watching this? Like, it's an adaption. Also, you want artists and writers to be free to create the art and stuff that they want to create. And but again, while still being true to the source material, but that's what, you know, these writers get into do. That writers don't get into just take the script from the episodes and just copy and paste. They don't care to do that. That's not creatively interesting.
I would go a step further and say even that we're watching in the context of Avatar people. But maybe, I mean, you have to make a product that stands alone on its own as a profitable quality entity, right? Or you can't, I don't know. Either way, there's plenty of good in here. I look forward to a second watch. I do need to finish my season one. I think watching season two now has maybe, like I said, I think I need some time. Maybe I'll take a breath. I'll sleep on a little bit before I get back into everything. Because I think some of my, disappointments with season two affected season one negatively. And I don't want, that's not fair at all. But, you know, to come back and rewatch the whole set again and see how I feel with Heather. She hasn't seen any of it yet. So, sorry, she hasn't seen season two at all and she hasn't rewatched season one yet. So. We'll see. Looking forward to doing that. Chris, it's a... we've been recording for 150 minutes. What additional thoughts do you have? Final thoughts.
Got a lot of... not the final thoughts on the show. We probably got like 3 more weeks worth of...
Yeah, yeah. Of we got 3 more things around lined up.
And then we'll get to community, and then we'll get back to probably some type of topic around regular Avatar. OG Avatar.
The community episode's funny to me, because
Diet Avatar.
I'm super excited to talk about community, but it's sort of funny to have community be like an inside joke of like the thing that's always on the horizon, but we never do. That feels like a community thing. The right approach to it. And so we should just keep talking about it every week, forever, and then never... That'd be.
Thing is, I was thinking back, Harman. Like when we first. I think it was probably in March that we were like, oh yeah, we'll
February,
get
March something like that.
We'll do a community, yeah.
But hey, that's just if we don't do this because we had other good Avatar ideas. It's not a bad thing, and community is not going anywhere. It's gonna be fine.
And then I wanted to binge community before we do a community episode, and now it's been like probably 3 weeks since I finished. Maybe it wasn't that long ago, some time ago.
Yeah, I'll rewatch it again. I'll happily rewatch it again. Trying to convince Jordan to watch it the other day. I was like, listen, even if you hate it, it's like 2 long seasons and 4 short seasons. No, that's not true. 3 long seasons.
It is shorter than...
3 short seasons.
It is shorter than you realize.
Yeah, those last 3 seasons are all like 12 episodes or something. It's not long.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yahoo.
All right. Well, that's probably enough time from us. That's a book episode right there. We probably did it for the first season.
I know. Yeah, it is a book.
Hey, my name is Sean Chaylor. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the Objective Geek of YouTube and Blue Sky fame. And this is Avatar The Last Podcasters. Thanks for watching all the positive.
I'm going to play us out.
Please do. Hey, I forgot the name of it. Remind me the name of the thing. The instrument.
A kalimba.
I keep wanting to call it a marimba, but that is not it's not the same thing at all. And leave all the positive interactions and comments and reviews and likes and thumbs ups down in the description. Do that for us. I'll leave the information in the description. Thank you, and we'll see you next time. Go ahead, Chris.
It's just leaves from the vine. Whoa, that was the wrong key. Jeez.
You might have to come closer to your mic, too.
Okay.
Okay, Discord is so good at filtering out, I can't hear a thing. But Discord's really good at filtering out background noise. Right up in your business. Get it.
That was not as good as I can usually do because it was so close to me and I could barely see the keys. Also, maybe you could barely hear it.
No, could not hear a single note, but I'm leaving this in here because your spirit was in the right place and people can just deal with that. Nope, couldn't hear a note. Discord.
Can you hear?
No, I can't hear a thing. Every once in a while, what's funny, Chris, is you could hear a click. Like I could hear the click of the metal, but not the note it produced, which is kind of funny. Listen, I promise that Chris can play that song on the kalimba. I've heard it with my own two ears, and it's great. So, Chris, I'm leaving that gap in there, and everybody can just meditate during that time and watch you gently bob your head back and forth. I can. It's funny. I can hear the clicks, but not the tone. Discord mutes the tone. That's wild technology, though.
You didn't hear that just now?
Just a, I hear a tick. Yeah, just a click. Oh, do like in a row. Like I heard multiple when it was sort of together. Yeah, that's weird. When it's like really combined and together, I can hear it. Huh. Anyway. Listen, it sounded great. I believe it in my heart.
It's a failure.
I hope it sounded great, Chris. I optimist that it did sound great.
I practiced for hours for this moment. And did you
know? Discord's probably got like an easy sound filtering button right in front of our faces. We just never click buttons because we never had to. All right. Y'all have a great night. We'll see you later.